I would like to call the Library Joint Powers Authority Board of Monday, February 14th, 2011 to order. Helga, may we have a roll call?
Yes. Supervisor Peary?
Here.
Citizen Gert?
Here.
Councilmember Byers?
Here.
Councilmember Reed?
Here.
Councilmember Terrazas?
Here.
Supervisor Stone?
Here.
Councilmember Story?
Here.
Citizen Poitinger?
Here.
Citizen Gorson?
Here. We have an agenda in front of us, and I would like to suggest a change to that agenda. I would like to move our item number 7, other business, up after our consent agenda, so it would become 5A. Does anybody have any issues on the board with that?
No.
There, you know, there is a 5A already.
Thank you. Let's make it.
How about 5.1?
5.1. Thank you.
Move approval.
Clearer. Did we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? And we have time for oral communications, which is a time for the public to make comments on anything not on the agenda. Is there anybody who would like to do that?
We haven't approved the minutes of January.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm eager to get to the topic at hand, apparently. Thank you, Ellen. We do have minutes.
I'll move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Now is the time for oral communications. Any member of the public wants to talk about library matters that are not on the agenda tonight? I don't see anyone. I just have one quick one, which is we had an opening on our finance subcommittee, and David Terrazas has kindly agreed to join us and did attend the last meeting. So the committee is now made up of Sam Story, David Terrazas, and myself.
Barbara, we have somebody for oral communications.
Oral communications, okay. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Marilyn Garrett. I'm a retired school teacher from Pajaro Valley Schools and also part of Wireless Radiation Alert Network. Since the library system has been co-opted by Homeland Security, wireless technology in the libraries is an extension of this insidious surveillance system of the public. Just this month, February 2011, the renewal of the Patriot Act, so-called, assures the continuation of spying upon library users. Cloaked like a wolf in sheep's clothing, microwave radiation Wi-Fi is an invisible and deadly health hazard. Governments, organizations, and libraries around the world have banned or warned against wireless technology. There's an attachment here. Also, as Diana Thatcher writes in her article entitled Libraries, Keep Public Library Wi-Fi Free, here's the quote, a shining example of the alternative in action is the National Library of France, the equivalent of our Library of Congress. France's National Library recently placed a moratorium on Wi-Fi and exchanged microwave radiation for wired connections. They based their decision on scientific medical research demonstrating harm from electropollution. The library consists of 15 million holdings located in 4 tower buildings, a staff of 2,500 employees, and a budget of $254 million. I respect that the Santa Cruz Public Libraries have always strived to accommodate persons with disabilities. However, since Wi-Fi has been installed in the libraries, those with electromagnetic hypersensitivity, also called radio wave sickness, which I think is more appropriate, have been denied equal access to our libraries. Since 2002, electromagnetic hypersensitivity is recognized by the U.S. Access Board, which is the federal agency that enforces the Americans with Disability Act. Therefore, in order to accommodate all library patrons, Wi-Fi must be removed immediately from our libraries. And there's some attachments here. And I'm also going to submit a statement from a person who fell quite ill at the library across the way and connects it to the Wi-Fi. Please remove the microwave radiation. Replace it with wired systems. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on to consent agenda. We have
a second.
We have Mark moving and Catherine seconding. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And now we'll move on to what is now item 5.1, other business, a discussion of the Service Model Task Force report. And I would like to start this with up here at the board with some brief comments around the board, particularly in light of what I read in the newspaper over the weekend, and with some potential compromises under discussion. So I would like to have the board, if there's any comments members of the board would like to make, and brief comments. It's not a time for thorough discussion. And then we'll go for public input. David?
I think, you know, this is the second meeting we've had, the second since the presentation was made back at the Loudon Nelson Center regarding the models. And I feel the discussions that I've had with neighbors and families over the past week or so makes me feel that we need to continue to hear public comment and to evaluate these proposals and not make a decision tonight on selecting a model and look for a way to find a solution that is not only long-term fiscally sustainable, it also protects valuable neighborhood services. And I heard that loud and clear last night meeting with families at the Central Library branch, and I'd like to honor that by, you know, making a motion that we postpone any decision tonight so that we can hear that comment and perhaps establish a subcommittee of the board to look at the development of a hybrid model that kind of addresses some of the tasks that we've heard from the public, not only in our session, but also formally at these hearings.
Are you taking motions at this point, Chair?
Yes, I am. And so that was a motion. Let me make sure I hear what you said.
That was let me make a motion that.
I thought I heard you say it was a motion. No.
Yes, it was, but it was a fairly long one.
Yes, it was.
So I'd like to make a motion that we postpone any decision tonight on selecting a model so that we can have an opportunity to hear public comment as well as a board identify an opportunity amongst ourselves to kind of synthesize these some of the models B, C, and D that we've heard from the public that have some opportunities to move forward as a body and also for the long-term sustainability of the library system.
Is that the shorter version?
Yes, it is. This is new to me, so you're going to have to forgive me, but it comes from the heart.
It was a perfect replacement for Mike Ropkin.
Fortunately, this isn't on TV, right?
Yeah, that's right. If the motion is to postpone the meeting, postpone a decision in the hopes that we can come to a compromise that might do us better than a 5-4 vote, I would second that motion. I think that it's very clear, you know, this board is and the community really, it's just headed over this cliff, full speed ahead, And I appreciate the thought to try and kind of put our brakes on and stop and think about how we're going to do this in the future. So I don't know if you want to vote on the motion or maybe we should hear the public testimony before, but I think once we get to a motion, we should probably hone that down a little bit.
What I would like to do is we have a motion and we have a second before we begin discussions or deliberating, and I would like to to take it to the public, to get public input at this point. It might help the public hone their comments and understand the direction that we are or are not taking tonight.
Just a point of order, the second, who seconded the motion?
Me. I did.
Oh, that was the second. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think when we come back to discussion, we might want to clarify the motion and narrow it down a little bit, but I think I second the sense of the motion.
All right. So with that, why don't I... Was there... Oh, Sam, sorry.
Well, I think Mark had his hand up first.
And I guess maybe just something to think about or a clarification, especially if we're going to hear from the public. You know, we've had the task force. We've had lots of discussion and lots of information already. So I'm a little bit leery of setting up another subcommittee. Just I'm not quite sure to do what. I do, what Supervisor Peary said is true, that we seem to have a fairly even division depending on how you divide it up. And given the controversy that this represents, I think that's damaging for the system as a whole and certainly for our communities. If there, if you will, a compromise, if there's a compromise to be had, I think we owe it to the county, to all the residents here, to find something that is going to work. I'm sitting here not quite sure what that's going to be. But since one of the questions that came up last time and that I hear constantly is sort of is the numbers of what really the numbers we're going to be expecting to be, whether it's the insurance costs in the future, the tax revenues, and also I would hope. So if we are going to go this direction, I want to make sure we have the appropriate folks also at the table from the different entities to be able to answer those questions and put sort of the models. I'm not sure, you know, if we're creating yet another model, we're just going to be kind of back here. So I'm not sure what the end product is going to be, but one of the things we need to make sure is that we've got the right people at that table giving input so that we've got some solid foundation to work from. Because each of these models that we've been working with in a lot of ways represents a philosophy. There are not a lot of details worked out in each of them, and so the implementation is what is at stake. Each model could represent any number of things depending on the implementation. That implementation is going to depend on the economy. It's going to depend on the tax numbers. It's going to depend on what some of those numbers really are. But then the basic philosophical differences of do we close branches, do we not close branches, still remains. And that's something that this board is going to have to wrestle through and at some point make a decision on. But if we can get better information, solidify the impact of what these models mean, I think it's probably worth taking that time to make sure we're very clear about it. But I think we need to be then very clear if we are going to push it off to make sure we know what's coming back, why, who's going to be at the table, so that we're not, I mean, we have to respect the task force members who already went through a great deal of effort and energy. So we have to put some bounds around, I think, what we're going to be expecting from this and how we're going to move forward.
Jim?
I would agree. I appreciate the sense of the motion and what's driving it and the comments that have been made before. If there is an opportunity for a solution where everybody can get a little bit of what they want, most of what they want, and we can have ideally a consensus on something by a 6-3 or a 7-2 or an 8-1 or a 9-0 rather than a bitter 5-4 where the 4 are just figuring out how to undo the 5. We definitely do owe that to the system, I think, and to all of our residents who use it. I guess a question, and maybe this is something, Madam Chair, that we can take up after the public comment, but would we probably need to identify specifically who would be on that committee David, I don't know if you had any thoughts on who that should be. And then the other thing to Mark's point, all the committees began work under one premise for what our expected increases were going to be in health care costs and pension costs. And since the task force started, those numbers have gone up substantially, and they affect all models, all four of them. To Mark's point, if we're going to go back and try and find a way to bring everybody together, let's make sure we're using the best numbers that we have, the most realistic numbers that we can get from our finance director when we're looking at a compromise approach.
Thank you. Catherine?
Yeah, my understanding of the motion and second at this point is just to not make a decision tonight and hear from the public, and then it will come back for discussion. Is that correct? We aren't yet talking about another task force or another committee
at this moment. Oh, okay. I thought there was a committee.
I know you brought it up.
And it is something that I would like to be included in the motion.
Well, that's a whole nother.
Well, we had a motion on that, and I believe we had a second on that motion. So when we bring it back to discuss in detail, we can discuss.
But his motion, when he repeated it, did not say anything about a committee.
It did.
The first line it did, but when you repeated the motion for her to second. I'm not arguing. It's okay. I listened to the when you repeated it, because that's the one part I think will take a lot of discussion, whether there should be a committee, a subcommittee, how many on it, whom on it, and I have a lot to say about that. But I'd rather say all of that after the.
I agree.
But maybe I could ask the second of the motion, maybe it was your understanding, that there would be a committee.
Yes, that was my understanding.
Okay, that's fine.
And that we would, after the public input, we would have more discussion about
on
what that looks like, who staffs it, for example. You know, how what do we do with the task force people? You know, how do these fit together?
Right. Okay, good. Just wanted to clarify that.
Nancy, did you have your?
No, that's where I was going to, Catherine. So I'm fine with that. That we listen to the public at this point, and then we'll have our discussion.
Lee?
I'll hold my comment till later.
Okay.
Yes.
Sam, anything? And I will hold mine as well till later. So now we would like to take public comment. I'd like to see, by a show of hands, how many people are intending to talk. And Gabe, if you could try to count those for me.
On our list, we have about 32.
Are there people out there? Keep your hand up if you have not signed the list. Keep your hand up if you have not signed the list.
About 15, I'd say.
Okay.
I'd say there's
52 at a quick count.
52, and there's more out in the hall? Yeah, I will take that into account. Okay, so somewhere between 50 and 55 or 50 and 60, it sounds like. So what I would like to do is 2 minutes per speaker. It will be timed, and on this podium you will see a little yellow light flash when you have 15 seconds left. And when the time is up, Gabe will let you know that your time is up. And I would just like to take a moment to say I know everybody is very passionate about this and very, very emotional. We on the board are as well. But I would like to remind people that we actually all have the same goal. We all want to see a thriving library system that does the best for everybody in our county. So I would just ask people to take a deep breath, dial back the rhetoric just a bit. It really helps me personally, I won't speak for the rest of the board, it helps me make a decision when I can hear some reasoned comments made. And most people do that. I'm not saying you don't. But emotions have run pretty high. So please come up and make your comments. And Gabe will start calling people from the first part of the list. Okay. And Leslie Auerbach is first, and she will be speaking on behalf of SEIU, so if she needs a little extra time, which I'm not sure she will, she'll get a little extra time.
Thank you very much. My name is Leslie Auerbach. I am a library assistant in outreach services, as well as the SEIU 521 senior steward for the library and chief steward for the city of Santa Cruz. And just to clear up a misunderstanding, I do not work for the union, and I am not paid for my work as a steward. In that capacity, I am a volunteer. And on behalf of my 85 or so workers, I do want to say with a heavy heart that we are dismayed by the lack of civility demonstrated by some board members. We expect our trustees to debate issues with decorum. Passion is fine. Vitriol is not. SEO represents about 85 workers, as I said, and this is the bulk of the library's staff. The following survey was distributed to all of our workers on February 3rd and resent to all of them on February 7th. My first choice of service model is Model A, B, C, D. I don't know. I'm still thinking. Those two were later combined as undecided, and I cannot support any of the service models. As of today, 74 workers had responded, of whom 68 had supported Model D, although one did so only with the caveat that she could only support it if Branch of 40 were kept as a branch. Three people supported, three workers supported Model C. Two were undecided, and one said that she could not support any of these models. Many of these workers noted that Model D is imperfect and will need adjustment. We are hopeful that those who are exploring community-based repurposing of the smallest branches will succeed in producing a resilient homegrown model for the future. But we cannot afford to forget the financial reality that has driven us to this debate. There is not enough revenue to keep our current system alive. Only Model D looks that fact squarely in the face. It is the only model with a structural integrity and fiscal realism to serve as a framework for the future. And as I told the City Council, our workers are all too aware, the Santa Cruz City Council, our workers are all too aware that financial sustainability is liable to cost us, the workers, positions. And we are worried about the sustainability of our own family finances. But we recognize that the economic reality we are facing is the greatest recession since the Great Depression. This is a crisis. Our workers ask the Joint Powers Board to fulfill their responsibility as trustees of the Santa Cruz City-County Library System to be stewards of library services for all of the people of Santa Cruz.
Thank you. Thank you. I would, Gabe, before you call names, I do want to give an opportunity for children to come up to the front here and speak now in case they need to leave before the end of the evening. Parents with children as well can speak.
Parents can go home. Children can go home.
As anybody? Yes.
My name is Justina Nichols. I live in Ben Lomond. This is my daughter, Dahlia, who's 3 years old. And as a parent of a preschool-aged child, the Felton Library is a vital aspect of our lives. Visits to the Felton branch have become a part of our weekly schedule. It brings excitement, fun, passion for books to our daughter, not to mention the many novels and cookbooks that I have checked out for myself. It's such a wonderful and needed resource for our family. I also work, and the Felton branch is the best location to spend quality time with my daughter late in the afternoon hours and on Saturdays. Using the location for reading to her is a wonderful one-on-one bonding time, which is extremely precious to me. Living in Ben Lomond, the Felton branch is an ideal location to spend quality reading time before or after going to our local park, grocery stores. We do have the Boulder Creek Library, but it's in the opposite direction of many of the activities and community services that we use. Closing the Felton branch makes it harder for many of us to get to the library, and it'll mean fewer people from our community will use the library, and fewer children will have that relationship with libraries as part of our lives. Our Felton Library is an important part of what makes the community special. It's a place where we teach our kids to read, teaching her to love books. It's a safe place for our children to do their homework, regardless of their home situation, and for people who don't even have computers or internet access at home. Our Felton Library has that. As our daughter grows up, it's going to be an important resource for her to spend after-school hours on working on her homework and checking out books on topics which are current for her everyday life. Really, closing our branch is going to be a disservice to local families, including ourselves.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols.
Thank you. Please keep the Felton branch open.
my son Jonah. He goes to Santa Cruz Children's School, which is within walking distance of Brant Sephardi.
Can you please step closer to the mic?
Sure. And there's about 51 kids at his school that go to the library once a week and check out books. He had wanted to say that he loves the library and he's loving learning to read, so he really wants that library to stay open for all the kids that go weekly in kindergarten through sixth grade, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
A library is a place where kids can learn. If you take the libraries or close them out, kids won't be able to learn as much. And please keep the libraries open.
Hello, my name is Caitlin Praley. I am a current member of the Felton 4-H. I speak for Felton 4-H when I say we need our Felton Library. Please keep it open so we may have a resource center. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Thomas Wynn, and this is Lucy. She's 5 years old, and she goes to the library in Felton, Ben Lomond, and Boulder Creek all the time. We're residents of Ben Lomond. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Thanks for serving on... we love our libraries, and we love that you're doing the work that you're doing. Thank you for doing it, all of you. These are cookies my wife made. They should be in no way considered a bribe. But there are more under certain circumstances. So I'm just going to leave them right there, and no one needs to see anyone receive or take. Lucy doesn't want to talk, but her brother Lennon did talk earlier, and he told me that libraries are places where kids learn, and they learn things their parents can't tell them. I want to say just a couple of quick points that I went online today and I liked the library on Facebook. But it seems to me that coming here in person and interacting with you all has been a more effective and a more rewarding and meaningful experience. I own a small business in Ben Lomond and I currently serve as the president of the San Lorenzo Valley Chamber of Commerce. I think we're underestimating the economic value that the libraries bring to each of those communities. And I'm strongly in favor of upgrading the technology, but not at the expense of closing the library branches. Separate fundraising should be done to accomplish this. And as much work as the task force has done, I don't think we've tapped into the creativity of Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn.
Thank you. I don't think Santa Cruz... I'm not a marketing person, but I have a couple of suggestions. Can't we get a librarian calendar? I think that would raise some funds. How about a pancake breakfast for all the...
Thank
all
you. Thank you. The time is up.
Thank you.
But you can leave us with those ideas. Any other children or parents with children? Come on up.
As people have said, I believe that...
Good evening. My name is Susan Green Agbelakali, and these are my two sons, Soji and Yemi, 3 and 5 years old. We live on Nagley Avenue, and our living room window looks out at the Garfield Library. So we can tell you it is a well-used neighborhood library. We know when the library is open because we regularly see the same neighborhood kids riding their bikes, their skateboards, and walking there alone who would not be able to do the same to the downtown branch. This is sure to be true for the other branches that are all further from downtown than Garfield is. If you vote to close branches, there are hundreds of kids who will inevitably go to the library less frequently. If you vote to close branches, you are telling hundreds of youth that libraries aren't that important. We need to expand positive activities for youth in our community, not shut down the ones that we have that are successful and funded by the people. The idea circulating that we should turn Garfield Library into a community center misses the point. We already have a successful community resource, our library, that promotes literacy, serves all ages, and is deeply valued by the local families. As you know, less than 3 years ago, 73% of county residents passed Measure R voting to extend permanently the quarter-cent sales tax to support the libraries as we knew them in 2008. Don't break your promise. These revenues are already beginning to rise after hitting an historic low. We can live with fewer hours until the economy improves. If you shut branches, they're unlikely to ever open again. The Library Task Force came up with two financially sound options that keep all branches open with a $1 million reserve. So I don't believe there is any reasonable justification for closing any of our branches and cutting any of our community off from access. The task force spent months and developed four models. Why have not each of them been presented? I think it's an insult to the people who spent hours developing four models. The way our library director has advocated for one model is completely inappropriate, and she has now pitted library staff against the public.
Thank you, Ms. Green.
Please stand up for young families. Let
them
know
you.
That libraries
are important.
Thank
you. Your time is done. And I would also... I would also just like to take a minute to ask people to be very careful to veer into comments on persons or individuals. Please make comments on opinions. That's what we're here for. But please not on individuals. Thank you.
Hi, we're the Metessa family, and we live in Ben Lomond, and we're wondering why the task force didn't look at the $4.1 million that headquarters needs. Why can't we make that transparent? Instead of looking at branches first, let's look at administrative costs and see what can be done there. The Felton branch, I think, is just 5% of the administrative budget, which is really small potatoes, but it serves a very underserved community. We're very facility poor. We don't have our own Parks and Recs department. And Felton and Ben Lomond and parts of Bonnie Doone, if you add all those people together, we're roughly the same size as the city of Scotts Valley, and they're not being asked to give up their library. Do you want to say something?
The reason I like the library is because it's close and it's a really good library.
Don't know how much time I have, but another version of sustainability is being able to walk to places and shop places that are closest to you. All of those libraries that are being under consideration are all heavily walked and biked to by the local population, which is a really long-term vision of sustainability, rather than having to drive and waste our fossil fuels to take unnecessary trips. So I think we should be supporting what we have already in our communities. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Autumn Bouchard, and I'm here tonight to represent Felton 4-H, Valley Churches United Mission, and the homeschool community. As a freshman in high school, access to a large variety of books, other media, and the internet is crucial to our educational system. I say this on behalf of all the youth in the county. By closing the libraries, you shut out the opportunity for low-income families to help their kids thrive and become educated citizens of our community, and for their parents to find jobs and be productive citizens as well. These youth who depend on the libraries as a means of gaining more knowledge and having the opportunity to get a higher education will have a lesser chance of receiving scholarships and attaining a higher GPA necessary for entry to colleges. Seniors who have dedicated their whole lives to making this county a better place to live also rely on the library. They may not have the money or the transportation to travel even further to the library. For many of them, books, DVDs, the daily newspaper, and audio tapes are their only form of entertainment and access to additional resources. I understand the reasoning on both sides, but closing the libraries entirely is not a sufficient solution. Are you willing to overlook the youth, who are this county's future, and shut out the seniors, who are the foundation of the community? Please compromise and reconsider. Thank you.
Do we have any other parents with children or children who wish to speak? All right. Gabe, if you can call people.
Okay. My apologies if I don't get your name quite right. I'll do my best. Please correct me if you like. Robert Levy, Chris Call, Philip Spotter, Sean Wharton.
My name is Rob Lee Levy, and my handwriting is terrible. So, I served as the second district supervisor in Santa Cruz County for 12 years from 1980 to 1982. During that period, I also served on the library oversight board as a board representative. So there's I'd like to touch on a little bit of history, because in a sense, you are revisiting events of the past. In the early 80s, the financial cutbacks were significant. The library faced cutting back on books, cutting back on hours, trying to do everything they could, and it was proposed that the branch library should be closed. At that time, there was an uprising of support for the branch libraries, and I think there's sound reason for it. In fact, most of them were preserved and survived for a number of years, in the case of La Selva Beach, which I know best because I live there, with volunteer support. And the system serves 130,000 people in the unincorporated area and 65,000 in the incorporated areas. These are different communities. They need different kinds of services. So I'd like you to consider that, in fact, you're dealing with a system, and you should not destroy the system in order to change it. And I believe that, in fact, that's what you would do. Bond and revenue measures for your library and our library depend on continued community support. That requires keeping promises. Promises have been made to the public about the maintenance of the branch libraries. And I do not think we should consider putting at risk that public support, public contract, by taking an unnecessary step. I'd like to turn to the four proposals before.
Thank you, Ms. Libby.
Could I request a few more minutes?
We have so many people who want to speak, so I think we need to move on. All right.
Thank you very much. I will be brief. First of all, the title of your report says that these are four financially feasible proposals. Two of them provide for cutting the branches. Two of them provide for keeping the branches. They all are based on the same numbers. You're going to get new numbers because things change, but the comparison remains. I would like to point out that of the funding for the branch libraries, that constitutes 3% of the library system budget. You will not save the libraries by cutting the branches. Again, I know there is passionate support. I'm not going to go into that. But I do believe that the importance of the community connection, the reality that you are a system that serves a variety of kinds of needs, really should promote the keeping of the branch system to serve the public of this community. And I believe also that if you break that contract, the ability of this system to survive and thrive in the future will be threatened. And I don't think you want to do it. I don't think any of the people who love the library want to see it done. So thank you very much. And I'm And believe me, I know that you're dealing with hard choices.
Hi, I'm Philip Slater, and I live downtown, and I'm one of the people who supposedly would benefit from Measure D, from Model D. And I use the downtown library a great deal, several times a week, and I have never, ever, ever used a branch library. But I think I would be an insensitive clod if I couldn't identify and understand the pain of people who would lose their library simply because I'm not one of them. And I personally would be willing, quite willing, to see the library open for fewer hours or even lose another day if it would keep the branch libraries open. And I feel that it's an insult to the public intelligence to talk about alternative solutions and public outreach and all that sort of thing. It seems like smoke and mirrors to me. There's a great deal of ambiguity about, hidden costs that people don't ever talk about Model D. One is the fact that if you do close all those branches, there needs to be an environmental impact report. I don't think anybody's ever mentioned this. But what's going to happen when all those people start driving downtown? I think this is something that should be figured into the expense analysis of closing the branches, and this doesn't seem to be done. The thing about closing the branches is that when talking about alternative solutions to having the branches, it's a little bit like being a little bit pregnant. You either have buildings with people in them and books and children reading and people browsing, or you don't. There is no solution. There is no halfway. There is no substitute. And I really don't believe anybody else believes that either, that if the branches were closed, that somehow that would be made up in some esoteric way. And it's when it's over, it's over. When those branches are closed, they won't be reopened.
Thank you, Mr. Slater. Next, we have Chris Call, Sean Wharton, Tandy Beal, and Glenn Lyons.
Please sign up.
If you wanted to get public comment, please sign up on the list on the podium here or to the side. Thank you. They won't be left out. Once we've gone through this list, we will solicit to see if anyone else wanted to speak. We will make sure that we go out to the lobby outside and make sure that we catch anyone that might be out there.
There are also some empty chairs right here up in front for a few people, and some empty spaces in the rows. I can see that.
Side door. We could open the side door. Jim Barber, would you come to the side doors? You're all set.
Okay. Okay. If you just hold on just a minute, I'm trying to figure out a way where we can be a little more accommodating. We can, exactly. People can come up front. There is space.
Fire code. My understanding of this facility is that they do enforce the fire code. David and Catherine maybe can help that.
All right.
So I don't know about sitting on the floor.
There's speakers outside?
There are, if we open the side door, some people could gather there and hear, but that's another option. I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not going to comment on the public input.
All right. Let's keep going with public input.
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Call. I want to thank you guys for the careful decisions that you made on the last two budget revisions. I really appreciate that. Can you hear me? Okay, sorry. Is that better? Okay, I want to thank the board for the careful decisions that you guys made on the last two budget revisions. And I hope that creative dialogue will continue regarding implementing new technology in thrifty, sustainable, green ways that include as many patrons as possible. This would mean keeping the branches open to encourage families who walk together to neighborhood branches and elementary school children who bike alone from home or school to continue using both low-impact transportation and library services. Supplying the branches with some of the technology that librarians may be interested in pursuing would mean inclusion of the many branch patrons who do not have internet at home. Next page. There is a significant number of different kinds of people who, for various reasons, would be more encouraged to use the library if their branch remained open than if they could download library books on Kindle at home. These are people who can't afford a computer, internet access, or a Kindle reader. These are people who prefer the superior visual quality of printed books, and people for whom the branch library is a community space for families to meet. I personally rely on Garfield Park Library for all of my internet use and am willing to volunteer for special programs, as in Model C. And thanks for coming up with Model C. Okay.
My name is Sean Wharton. I live in Lompico. And incidentally, Felton has a much bigger meeting room for the public if you ever want to use it at Ziandy Firehouse. I'm going to talk about Lompico Water. I know that doesn't sound like it fits, but we ran into a terrible problem, and we actually almost went into bankruptcy problems because our cost for personnel got to 65%. And this meant we could no longer fix the tanks, do the projects we needed to get done, let alone do new projects. And it seems to be that in looking at these models, we're sitting at 65% cost for personnel in the library system. And we're now, our costs for personnel are down below 50%. We are no longer a member of PERS. We leave it this year. We are no longer a member of Anthem Blue Cross. We have hospital and healthcare costs covered, but not for the family, unless you want to pay the dividend for family services and the healthcare stuff. We do not have automatic COLAs any longer. What we did was we trimmed our cost of personnel way down. When you only have 35% of your budget to spend, you don't have much. And I think you should really look at that a lot more carefully. Otherwise, you'll end up in the predicament of closing libraries, which would be terrible. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tandy Beal, and I first of all would like to thank you all for spending the hours and the care that you're doing. It's clear with all of these people here that we as a community care to be an educated and civilized and cultured community. This is fabulous, and it's wonderful that we're in this dialogue. I do think that it's clear that all of us also want to build communities. It's clear in option C. We all want a greener Santa Cruz. It's in option C. We want to help our elders and our poor people stay engaged in life and in culture. It's in option C. And last but not least is I think we all would like an America where we trust our government and we trust our politicians and that what we vote for is what is delivered. And we need to keep that secure. We need to develop our belief again in our politicians. So please vote for C.
Glenn Lyons. I crunched those numbers. I actually came up with something a little more than 3%. I came up with 4.5% and about $450,000. That's to keep all the four branches open. So I'm sure that Jim Reed's going to come up with a worst-case scenario about how the numbers are going to change, and he may be right, but it's still going to be a very small percent. So I think when we hear this stuff about somehow doomsday comes if we and it's not sustainable, I don't get it. I don't think people out here get it. $450,000 translates to 5 to 7 full-time employees. So one way to look at this is you have a 6-branch system, and you got 5 to 7 more people there than you would otherwise. Does anybody really believe that that's the difference between a forward, technologically advanced, great system and a 10-branch system, which is somehow in the dark ages? You read Model C, of course, you'll see that that's nonsense. But, you know, so often when people want to get rid of something, they say financial necessity to or economic necessity, when what we're really talking about is political choice. And I think other people have made that clear. And the final thing is I really appreciate David Tarasas reaching out. But I think you all need to be realistic here. I do not think you're going to be able to. You can come back with a compromise that tries to bring more of what Model D wants that keeps branches open. I think that's a realistic compromise that Model C people will bend over backwards to do. But I think you're just be kidding yourself if you think you're going to be able to come back here with a compromise that ends up closing branches. If you can't have heard that tonight, then I don't know how you can be a politician sitting up there, actually. Thank you.
Tony Campbell, Glenn Taylor, Gordy Abenskler, Virginia Henry.
Good evening. I'm Tony Campbell. I'm a co-author of Model D. I want to make 4 points that I think are relevant to your decisions tonight or whenever. I would like, number one, for you to notice which groups of people have not addressed you either by email, by letters, by public testimony. Currently, about 70% of potential patrons of our library are not active borrowers. Those people aren't here, yet they contribute to the financing of our system and should be served by it. If we were a business, we'd be real interested in who they are and how to better serve them. The majority of our population is under the age of 44. How are you meeting the needs of these younger people who increasingly go online to read newspapers and download print and other materials to their electronic devices? What we have now is a bricks and mortar system that's far more recognizable to my 19th century grandmother than it is or will be to my 21st century children and grandchildren. Our current system operates on the philosophy that if you build it, they will come. If you keep 10 doors open, they will come. When you look at your library use data, you simply do not have the support for that approach. Point two. When I served on the Library Joint Powers Board, I repeatedly asked why we were not converting to self-checkout technology, and I always got the same response. We couldn't afford the conversion. Without capital to invest in our system, even for infrastructure that has a clear return on investment, you cannot modernize. Funds for modernization, funds for upgrades are part of the Model D plan for capital investments. Point three.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Okay.
Good evening. I'm Glenn Taylor from La Selva Beach. I was present at last week's meeting of your board here. I also came to the city council meeting. something that someone said both nights, that we can't have volunteers because they're not paid and they won't show up. Not true. The movers and shakers of the Selva Beach Improvement Association are made up of all volunteers, and I'll tell you, without them, the Selva Beach would have gone out to sea a long time ago. The Selva Beach Recreation District, the owners of the LSB Library, is made up of volunteers. Volunteers do show up. I work with 26 volunteers at Seascape Golf Club, each assigned to work specific hours on specific days. The golf course is open 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They are there to help provide a happy golfing experience for everyone concerned. There are half a dozen substitutes that fill in when needed. These volunteers do show up. As a matter of fact, their attendance is far superior to the paid staff. Thank you.
My name is Edie Abinchin. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I would like to respectfully remind this board that we can't have it both ways. You can't expect us to support bond issues and tax increases if you renege on promises made the last time you asked us to support bond issues and tax increases. In 1996, we passed Measure B with the understanding that this tax increase would keep open the small, out-of-the-way libraries that support literacy for their communities. A few years later, we passed Measure R, which strengthened that commitment. Now we're being told that you didn't really mean that. It's inconvenient to maintain all 10 libraries, and we are, in essence, being pruned away. There is no greater gift to give a child than the gift of literacy. Please do not shut the door on the educational future of these children by closing their access to books. The emotional bond of sitting down with a child and sharing a story is underestimated at our peril. If our libraries are closed, children in Felton won't be able to walk to the library. Children in La Selva won't be able to walk to the library. Children in Garfield Park and Brantseforti will lose lovely places to read. And patrons will be so disenfranchised that passing any kind of a bond measure, including that for much-needed technology, will be next to impossible. I implore you to think carefully about what you're about to do. The future of our whole community is at stake. Please do not turn Santa Cruz into a third world country. Thank you.
My name is Virginia Henry. I'm from La Selva Beach, and I will not deny that I have nostalgic feelings for my library. But that does not preclude my having objective reasons for valuing it. The importance of access to literature, history, culture, science, technology, philosophy, and entertainment, to name just the things that come first to mind. Our library, while little, has a prominent physical presence in our community, and this prominence validates the importance of those values in our lives. Now, children, adults, young and old, can safely walk or bike to the library. Automobile trips are made on uncrowded roads to adequate parking. This will be lost in a more centralized system. While the busy people on this board are doing their best to evaluate the four models, we are really aiming at a moving target. Technology is changing the face and future of libraries as we are having this discussion. Right now, the 10 branches are integrated into our lives. If they become irrelevant, then close them. Who knows? With technological changes, The branches may represent the future. All models are financially feasible. Why limit our option? Keep all open.
Beth Linenthal, Marilyn Garrett, Dan Hopperfeld, Jim Van Houten.
Hi, I'm Beth, and I'm a mom of two in Ben Lomond. My kids go to San Lorenzo Elementary. There's so many points to talk on tonight. I'll just pick a couple. They go to San Lorenzo Valley Elementary, where they can go to the school library once a week and pick out one, maybe two books. And that's not enough to satisfy the homework that they're given. I take them to the Felton Library, and we check out bags of books. People think we're homeschooling, but we're not. That's enough to satisfy their need. We go to San Lorenzo Valley Elementary. We go to Felton Library. We don't go to Scotts Valley, and we don't go to Santa Cruz. Our path of travel every day is to keep our local business local first, and that includes Felton Library. And I'd appreciate any business or any effort to be creative in coming up with fundraising for the technology that apparently is needed at the main library.
I'm for keeping all the branches open. And I always like to ask the question of, why don't we have money for our parks, and why don't we have money for our libraries and our schools? We pay taxes. There's a big pie. Where does it go? Over half goes to the military for wars of U.S. empire in Afghanistan and Iraq. We need to turn the pie around and withdraw money from these murderous policies of our government and put it into the services that we need here. And until that is really addressed and altered, I think we're going to always be fighting over the crumbs. Recently I heard excerpts of a talk by Martin Luther King Jr. when he spoke out against the Vietnam War. And he talked about, and I have the quote, but I remember it's like some demonic siphon draining, robbing our communities of what we need. So I would also urge you to address that, because we can't just act like this is happening for no reason. It's happening because the priorities in this country are wrong and unjust, and that needs to be part of what we do to reclaim our rights and the services that we need as people in this country. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dan Hopperfeld, and I am with the Santa Cruz Children's Foundation. Like most people in Santa Cruz, we would like to see all of the library branches remain open. Should that not be possible, we would like to form a sustainable partnership with the city to keep the Branch of 40 branch open to the community. We imagine a beautiful, safe, and welcoming community center which enriches the artistic, intellectual, and emotional lives of those who visit and participate in the programs. Should the Branch of 40 branch library close, we are interested in forming a partnership to make this happen. Let us share the vision. The library. The Branch of 40 Children's Library opens its doors to young children who are accompanied by adults, or to older children who wish to participate in programs or to have a quiet place to read or study. Programs could include story hours, book checkout, homework help, reading challenges, and book groups. The community center. While maintaining its grandeur, this beautiful building offers spaces that can be used by the community. We are imagining a section for movement, dance, yoga, an open area for comfortable seating, for meetings, casual conversations, group activities, and classrooms. After school, summer, and weekend programs scheduled for children could include art, music, dance, sewing, youth group meetings, theater arts, literacy, story writing, study hours, and science explorations. Programs for families could include parenting classes, prenatal yoga, new mom groups, language classes, prep classes for the GED, nutrition and cooking courses, community meeting spaces for family groups. There are so many possibilities. Santa Cruz Children's School. During school hours, Santa Cruz Children's School would be in session. This is a tuition-based, not-for-profit school operated by the Santa Cruz Children's Foundation.
Thank you, Mr. Hoppenfield.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, members of the board. I'm Jim Van Houten. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for listening to all this testimony. I really think you're on the verge of solving this problem in a way that works for everybody. But I'm here to urge you specifically not to close the branch libraries. I would ask you to consider the following. One, your alternative analysis presents an unfair picture of the options available. It seems to say close the branches in order to save funds for some super technology at the central library and maybe some more high-powered staff. We don't want it. We want our branch library. If you take it away, you're taking away our practical access to libraries. Two, branch libraries are critical community assets for places like La Selva Beach. We have invested lots of local time and money in buildings and volunteer service resources. The local Parks and Recreation District remodeled the building to its present pleasant, efficient configuration to make this available to the local community. We understood that tax measures would help the libraries and keep open the branches. If you betray this trust, you will lose our support for the library system and certainly any future of funding measures. You may well be subject to litigation. Four, you have no plan for preserving your options to reopen closed branches when current fiscal crises abate. If you close the branches without these plans, you're burning bridges for the future. You are imposing a long-term solution on a short-term problem. Five, volunteers are underutilized and overly restricted by policy. Six, fiscal restraint should be imposed on the Central Library to ensure funding for branches. Thank you very much. I think we can do it.
Glenn Hanna, Karen Hanna, John Schnook, Phyllis Mayfield.
Hello. Thank you for all your hours, and I really appreciate it. I'm a retired librarian, and I have worked since I was in university at Berkeley as an assistant in libraries, and totals 77 years, and 13 of those were as a professional, and 10 of those were as a school librarian, and 12 of those, whatever it comes to, 12 of those were as a volunteer, and 10 of those years were at Ben Lomond Library after it was taken out of the system to try to keep some semblance of a library there. It did work, but not as well as keeping other libraries open here and under a main system where it's coordinated and the collection can be equal in various portions as they're necessary to be used. But when I went to library school, and that was not in the 19th century.
The community center. While maintaining its grandeur, this beautiful building offers spaces that can be used by the community. We are imagining a section for movement, dance, yoga, an open area for comfortable seating, for meetings, casual conversations, group activities, and classrooms. After school, summer, and weekend programs scheduled for children could include art, music, dance, sewing, youth group meetings, theater arts, literacy, story writing, study hours, and science explorations. Programs for families could include parenting classes, prenatal yoga, new mom groups, language classes, prep classes for the GED, nutrition and cooking courses, community meeting spaces for family groups. There are so many possibilities. Santa Cruz Children's School. During school hours, Santa Cruz Children's School would be in session. This is a tuition-based, not-for-profit school operated by the Santa Cruz Children's Foundation.
Thank you, Mr. Hoppen.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, members of the board. I'm Jim Van Houten. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for listening to all this testimony. I really think you're on the verge of solving this problem in a way that works for everybody. But I'm here to urge you specifically not to close the branch libraries. I would ask you to consider the following. One, your alternative analysis presents an unfair picture of the options available. It seems to say close the branches in order to save funds for some super technology at the central library and maybe some more high-powered staff. We don't want it. We want our branch library. If you take it away, you're taking away our practical access to libraries. Two, branch libraries are critical community assets for places like La Selva Beach. We have invested lots of local time and money in buildings and volunteer service resources. The local Parks and Recreation District remodeled the building to its present pleasant, efficient configuration to make this available to the local community. We understood that tax measures would help the libraries and keep open the branches. If you betray this trust, you will lose our support for the library system and certainly any future of funding measures. You may well be subject to litigation. Four, you have no plan for preserving your options to reopen closed branches when current fiscal crises abate. If you close the branches without these plans, you're burning bridges for the future. You are imposing a long-term solution on a short-term problem. Five, volunteers are underutilized and overly restricted by policy. Six, fiscal restraint should be imposed on the central library to ensure funding for branches. Thank you very much. I think we can do it.
Glenn Hanna, Karen Hanna, John Schnook, Phyllis Mayfield.
Hello. Thank you for all your hours, and I really appreciate it. I'm a retired librarian, and I have worked since I was in university at Berkeley as an assistant in libraries, and totals 77 years, and 13 of those were as a professional, and 10 of those were as a school librarian, and 12 of those, whatever it comes to, 12 of those were as a volunteer, and 10 of those years were at Ben Lomond Library after it was taken out of the system to try to keep some semblance of a library there. It did work, but not as well as keeping other libraries open here and under a main system where it's coordinated and the collection can be equal in various portions as they're necessary to be used. But when I went to library school, and that was not in the 19th century, but it was a while ago, the whole stress was, don't worry about that bookwork, take care of the kids. And that's my battle cry tonight. Let's take care of the Let's take care of the kids, any age kid. I'm 85, and I'm a kid still. So I want you to know that I just don't agree with closing any of the branches. I don't care about gizzies that people can go use from their home. We've all got some kind of those gizzies, pretty much. And gadgets that you can use to look in screens. I want a real person to at least be across the room from me when I go into a library. So I wanted you to help understand this emotional connection that people have to the library, which I have not heard about tonight. Thank you very much.
Good evening, board members. My name is Glenn Hanna. I'd like to begin by thanking Rob Lee Levy to come. I heartily support everything Rob Lee said. If you believe that a 3 to 4.5% reduction in the branch costs are going to save the library system, you're sadly mistaken. I would like to start by presenting you with a study that I did in 1992 about the library. At that time, I had concerns about the underspending of the book budget and the cost, the employee costs. Let me go back and briefly review what happened. In 1992, the library had 64 full-time employees. Today, it has 105. That's a 40-something, well, close to 50% increase. The library branches in 1992 were open 38 hours a week. Today, they're open 26. That's a one-third reduction. What is obviously wrong with the model? We have 50% more people, and we're open two-thirds of the amount of time. There's something wrong right there. So I began to look at where these costs were spent, and I began by taking a comparison to the other library system in the county, which is in Watsonville. And as employee costs represent two-thirds of the budget, it was revealing to find out that the average salary for the full, not salary, the employee cost for the full-time equivalents in the Santa Cruz system is currently $71,600. The number in Watsonville is $43,100. Question one, why does the employees that work in this part of the county cost this part of the county $30,000 more than when they work in Watsonville? To amplify the Watsonville situation, you should understand that the Watsonville, both branches are open 47 hours a week. Our branches are open 26 hours a week. And then I took a look at to determine whether the cost of the Santa Cruz employee benefits are reasonable. I compared them with the cost of the 10 best funded libraries in the state of California.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna.
I'll be very brief. I'm right at the end.
30 seconds.
Most generous. I have
many people who want to speak.
I understand, but they. I compared the cost of our employee system to the 10 best funded libraries in the state of California. Santa Cruz ranks fifth of the top 10. I also looked based on the numbers in the newspaper, plans A through D, the costs. If you divide the numbers that were presented, the cost per each of those vary from $79,000 to $83,000. So what you haven't been told, if those numbers are correct, is that the adoption of any of those plans will necessitate an 11 to 14% increase in the cost of libraries. On the grand total, Watsonville system operates, if you take the total cost of the system divided by the number of hours that it's open, it costs $477 an hour. The cost to operate the Santa Cruz system cost $898. That's almost 180% of what it costs to operate the.
Thank you.
My name is Karen Hanna. I live in Live Oak. When you hear about the employee costs in Watsonville, I say we scrap plans A through D and we accept the Watsonville model. You can immediately see the problem. Management. Employees of the library system advising their bosses to keep paying them high wages and benefits, take it out on the customers by cutting services. If we're in a recession, in a library-killing recession, why are salaries going up? We all want jobs. We all want to preserve jobs. We all like these people. They're all very hardworking. But something is wrong. Someone needs to take a stand for the people, and especially the children. That's what we're hearing. The 5- and 6-year-olds are not interested in how many computers we have. They want books, and they want to read, and they want to spend time with their parents. And it's crucial in areas where we have, as people who don't work for the government, their livelihoods are going down. Their money is tighter than ever. They can't go out and buy books. They need to go to the library more than ever. If you work for the county, if you work for the city, this isn't a problem. You can buy all the books you want. It's time, when it comes time to negotiate with the union, somebody has to start standing up. Otherwise, very soon, we're going to have a lovely library headquarters for the administration and no libraries. Thank you.
John Schnuck, Kelly Salazar, Catherine Herdon, Cliff Barney.
Is John here?
Oh, okay. You want to speak?
Okay. Good evening.
Can I just say a couple parts he wrote on? Mm-hmm. He just wanted to mention he feels like we're not stuck to the options, the four options here. There are other ways to save money, cutting hours across the board on all branches, and the use of volunteers.
Good evening. My name is Kelly Salazar. I live in the Seabright neighborhood. And first of all, I'd just like to say that we're fortunate to live in a community where the future of our libraries is so passionately debated. I would personally like to thank everyone in this room. And I'm quite grateful for all of the eloquent speakers who have said much of what I wanted to say, so I'll keep this brief. I am speaking tonight in favor of keeping all 10 branches open. It seems to me that we're hearing clearly that the debate is not about books and services versus buildings. The critical issue is people. The consultant, Ms. Fry Williams, is stated in the report is saying that usage is affected first by convenience. So what that means is the children who are lucky enough to ride their bike or walk to their community school, that's very convenient and means that the library will be used. Parents of young children on the way to the park or grocery store, very convenient, number one for usage. Senior citizens who no longer drive and can walk to use the facilities, very convenient. It'll mean the library is used. I'd also like to point out that the proposed open hours of the various models on page 12 of the report show many more hours for the branches that are being proposed to be closed than what we currently have. They're showing 37 hours for those branches, and we have anywhere from 14 to 18 hours right now as a cost-saving measure, hopefully temporary. So I understand that the goal for the team working on Model C was to increase services. So, of course, they proposed increasing the open hours. But I would prefer to have a neighborhood library with reduced hours over no neighborhood library at all.
Thank you, Ms.
Good evening, Catherine Herndon, retired school nurse. Quick excerpts from LATimes.com, July 6, 2010, by Marilyn Johnson. U.S. public libraries, we lose them at our peril. Libraries are an essential service in action as well as an effective leveler of privilege and avenue of reinvention. As budget cuts affect more facilities, children will be the first to suffer. The U.S. is beginning an interesting experiment in democracy. We're cutting public library funds, shrinking our public and school libraries, and in some places, shutting them altogether. These actions have nothing to do with whether the libraries are any good or whether the staff provides useful service to the community. We won't miss a third of our librarians and branch libraries the way we'd miss a third of our firefighters and firehouses, the rationale goes. But I wonder. I've spent 4 years following librarians as they deal with the tremendous increase in information and the many ways we receive it. They've been adapting as capably as any profession, managing our public computers and serving growing numbers of patrons. But it seems that their work has been all but invisible to those in power. I've talked to librarians whose jobs have expanded with the demand for computers and training, and because so many other government services are being cut. The people left in the lurch have looked to the library, where kind, knowledgeable professionals help them navigate the government bureaucracy, apply for benefits, access social services. Public officials will tell you they love libraries and are committed to them. They just don't believe they constitute a core service. But if you visit public libraries, you will see an essential service in action as librarians help those who don't have other ways to get online, can't get the answers they urgently need, or simply need a safe place to bring their children.
Thank you, Ms. Herndon.
Okay, I'm going to share this article with all of you. I became a nurse because of the public library in my hometown, reading Cherry Ames and Sue Barton books.
Gabe, you can go ahead and pass those around along with, I think, somebody else brought up. Thanks.
Cliff Barney.
Hi, folks. I'm Cliff Barney. I'm from Aptos. I feel very honored to be among the group of speakers that you've heard tonight. I've been very much moved by what they had to say, and I want to take a slightly different tack and just say that I'm going to talk to you about libraries and computers and technology. And I'll say right away that my bias is that if you are a library board, you must keep the libraries open. It just seems to me that that's basic. I'm not a Luddite. I've worked in electronic publishing for years. I helped start an electronic news organization that's 20 years ago that's still running online. I'm very familiar with the technology. I think it's terrific. I just don't see why a library needs to be in the forefront of developing it. We are awash in it in this area. You can't avoid it if you're a kid. It's thrust on you at every corner of your life. There's no reason, nothing to say that a library needs to join that particular activity because the library itself is a very important environment that technology cannot duplicate, even though they like to make you think that they can. They can make you a virtual environment, but they cannot make you an environment that you come into where you see other people doing things in this local community, in this repository of our knowledge. And you see the difference in the way that books look and the way I don't have to explain it to you. You've been to libraries. This is a very, very important community environment. And if you have any way to keep the libraries open, you must do that. And find a way to compromise with the people who need other things. Thank you.
Jim Coppas, Christopher Schnook, John Vassilis.
Hi, and I also want to thank you all for your service, and I appreciate that this is not an easy decision for you. But having said that, I was at the meeting last week, and there was a lot of talk about the future of libraries. And I went on Google, and I entered in future of libraries, and I got 300 million citations. So, you know, I was able to go through a couple of them, but it got me to thinking about the future of this library system. And I got a hunch I can give you a little scenario what the future of the Santa Cruz library system is. You guys are faced with the recommendations of the library administration to shutter 40% of the existing libraries in your system. Okay, so tomorrow what happens? Boulder Creek Library is going to be downsized to some 20, 25 hours a week. That'll be the next to go. Who's next? Live Oak, if you read the plan that has been proposed or advocated by the staff, is already, they're talking about converting that to a hybrid community center. So that'll be the next one to go. Who's next? Would it be Capitola or Aptos? I'd think Capitola because they don't really have a building yet, so they'd be easy to slice. So pretty soon you can see where we're going with this. We're going to have one library. I think more significant even than making a decision to close any library branch, more significant than that, the decision that you face, is the one that creates the, or that loses the trust of the consumers, the electorate, the users of the library system. That's the decision that you really need to consider. What this will do to the future of any bond measure, whether it be city, county, for libraries, for firehouses, for anything. I urge you not to go down this road. Keep our libraries open, please. Thank you.
Christopher Schnuck. Thank you. John Fasolis, Jane Shaminsky, Autumn Bouchard, and Mitchell.
Why don't you move along to the next, and if...
Oh, I'm here. Hi, my name is Jane Shaminsky, and... I'm from Santa Cruz. I feel like another country heard from here. Last week, Mike Rotkin was admiring all the people from Felton, and I admire them too, but I think that sometimes we need to hear from other parts of the community. I live two blocks from the main Central Branch Library, so I hope that doesn't disqualify me from anything I'm about to say. But I worked for the Santa Cruz City County Library System for 11 years. I was in administration, I was the office manager, and I was the facility supervisor for all of the branches. I see that there's three survivors of my minutes from the 11 years of joint power board meetings that I attended, and I think I only missed two. So I'm pretty familiar with the workings of the board and also the staff and of the people that had to put the budgets together. And I saw the budgets rise and fall, rise and then fall again. But I'm not particularly advocating for anything except the survival of the library system as a whole. And I find it really demeaning to the library staff that I worked with so much during the years. I love every one of those branches. I was at each of those branches every month for 11 years because it was my job to nurture them, to keep them clean. I supervised the facilities maintenance, the staff, the building maintenance staff, the custodial staff. I love those libraries. They were wonderful. I was partly responsible for supervising the remodeling of the Garfield Park Library along with Teal Messer, the architect. But I have seen what's going on, because it's not just technology we're talking about. Every single book that goes out to every single library needs technology. Every single thing has to be cataloged. It has to be. I was a purchasing officer for a long time. Every book has a purchasing order. Every book is paid for individually. All of those depend on the computers, and the DRA system has been on life support for the last all the years that I was here. I've seen Dan Landry and his staff put it together with paper clips. And believe me, if I had wanted to make a lot of money, I would have never worked for the Santa Cruz Library.
Thank you, Mr. Minsky.
It is not the highest paying job that you could get in this community. You get to a point where you reach the top level of your salary, and that's it. You never go anywhere else, but you stay because you're dedicated and you love it.
Thank
Were you.
Were
you thanking me? Oh, I'm sorry.
Autumn Bouchard. Ann Mitchell. Ann Mitchell, Caitlin Prey, Chance Hoodlinson, Ron Powerant.
Maybe we can just ask if there's anyone left who does want to speak. Raise their hand. Are they there? Are they coming?
Joni Martin.
What was it, the Ron Power?
Just, why don't you just come on up? I mean, thank you.
I thought I kind of heard my name, but I couldn't hear because they were going so quick. My name's Laura Triona. You've heard me speak before. First of all, I want to say thank you to all the library joint powers. So you guys are dealing with some very tough decisions right now, and I really appreciate the effort and time you're putting in to make sure that they're decisions that are good for our community and our libraries both, especially this being a Valentine's Day. I also appreciate that you moved the meeting to Santa Cruz City Council chambers, because it gives us a chance to get closer with our neighbors and community members than it would have been at Loudoun Nelson. So I have made comments in the past about the needs of my family in Felton with a young daughter and an older one who's 5. They get their literacy experiences at the libraries, but I won't repeat those again because I know you heard me before. But I do have several questions that I wanted to make as public comments. In particular, I was curious about, and there were some additional numbers that came out in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about the cost of the branch, but I did know on Tuesday's meeting there was the library director had said it was hard to actually calculate those numbers, so I'm not sure how accurate those are. But obviously, to develop your numbers for the models, you had to make some estimates. And so what would be useful for the public to know is to get those numbers from the power boards about how much it actually costs for the branch with the various models. How much are we cutting when we are cutting these 4 branches that are small, that only take a couple people to run, and have been surviving with a little number of hours? Is it really worth it to get this much vitriol based on the amount of savings that we get? Also, what came up in Model D is the value of the bookmobile. We're losing the 4 branches, but we're going to use the bookmobile to reach more people, reach those 70% that aren't currently library users. So I think it would be useful to get some more data about the bookmobile. What was their circulation in 2007 and the following years? Can we really expect that to exponentially increase with no increase in funding to the bookmobile?
Thank you, Ms. Tran.
Thank you.
Good evening, Board. I'm Ron Pomerantz. Tonight you're strongly considering abandoning 4 of the 10 of our libraries. What's next in the process of defunding programs and services that a progressive, healthy, and vibrant community requires? This is the wrong message that we're sending our kids, our seniors, and our economically disadvantaged residents. Our libraries are the backbone of our democracy. Libraries serve a similar role as the Community Action Board in Community Bridges by feeding minds, offering ideas and hope, and providing a safe place that keeps folks engaged, interested, and out of trouble. Accessible neighborhood libraries maximize access to books and other resources for families, seniors, and the entire community. I remember some 30 years ago when Garfield Library was on the chopping block. But ultimately, the funds were found, and thousands of people can thank the benefits of having that branch open as well as we need the other ones. I remember my young children at the branch libraries, excited, curious, and thrilled, discovering new worlds around them. Your job must be to fight to improve the entire library system. Closing 40% of the branches undermines this ability. Rather than pit library patrons against each other, put your efforts towards getting us through these difficult times by maintaining what we have. The times, in my short time here, the library system is at a crossroads, we all know. Enhancing what we have will be a Herculean effort from you and the entire community. Please do not succumb to amputating the limbs and putting the entire system on life support. Even the Sentinel supports exploring options before a vote that would undermine our library system we've worked so hard and long to build.
Thank you, Mr. Pomerantz.
I thank you so much. Passage of Measure R is our community values and says that we must maintain all the libraries. Thank you.
Chance Huddleston, Peter Pathluck, Betsy Gallagher, Zan Latera.
Hello, my voice is kind of shot right now. I don't know why. But anyway,
Could we have your name?
My name is Peter Pateur, and I've been Santa Cruz a long time. I remember the Carnegie Library downtown, and dropping off the books there at the drive-up, and I used a bicycle at that time, but you could drop it off there and ride in the alleyway. Anyway, we're looking at the Sentinel thing, the difference between, there's only less than $400,000 difference between all the different plans. It seems like the reason some people want to pick D is because they can put more technology into the system. Well, I got enough technology at home. I can have access to stuff at home. Anybody who has a computer, is computer literate, has plenty of access. It's people who don't have a computer who need access, and they need to have it the hours more open than they are. So if there doesn't seem to be any reason to have a library which is closed most of the time. I think we need to keep open the libraries a lot more so people can actually use them, okay? And that's what you should be fighting for, all the libraries, because there's a lot of people around that don't have access. And all these toys that the library is going to buy with Plan D are totally unnecessary because we're going to be all on the cloud anyway. So you don't have to buy all this equipment. It's all going to be farmed out. And so there's no reason to buy all this this junk that's going to be that's obsolete when you buy it anyway. So Plan on C will just do fine for right now. And then once everything turns around, which I'm an optimist, everything is going to be fine, and we're going to have a lot more hours in the library, and everybody's going to be happy. But if you close them down, that's the end of it, I think. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Chuck Huddleston. I'm a Luddite, and I'm an ignorant one, too. All I know about this issue is the article I read in the newspaper, but I do remember libraries. I remember being a little kid and coming home with juicy stacks of books about space stations and dinosaurs and the fourth dimension, which I couldn't read, but I liked the funny-looking pictures in it. By the time I outgrew bicycles and got out of high school, I really didn't care that much about libraries, but I did care about books. For me, you learn that as a kid, and you learn it by walking to the library, you learn it by bicycling to the library, you learn it by being able to get to the library, and I don't care about your Kindle. I got books 50 years old. That's great battery life. They've never crashed on me. Disinforming a child. Without the branch library, you're headed for the Salinas model. No libraries, but a great gang problem and a high murder rate. If you don't get kids in love with books and in love with knowledge at an early age, and that means early access, and that means keep them all open, do that, and you've got a civilized society, and you can hire fewer $100,000 a year cops. Thank you very much.
Betty Gallagher, Zan Laterra, Alexandra, can't make out the last name, Lara, no, thank you, we already spoke. The last one I have on my list is Arlene Gensler.
Hi, I'm Betty Gallagher, and I live in Felton in Zanetti, and I'll be brief. I think of the children. I got my... I think of the children. I got my first library card in East Texas when I was about five, and I have been a reader ever since. The books have been primarily fiction, but they have still really increased my imagination and given me a love of books and a love of the written word and made me curious. Even when I read a fictional book, I get curious about the background, where's this place, what are the people like? And I think now of the times when I do go to the Felton Library, which is quite often, as one of the attendants here will verify, I always see children there. The children, they're studying, they're reading, and I think of what we will be doing to them if we take the library away. Children in Felton are... It's unlikely that I will drive very often to Boulder Creek from Felton to get a book if the Boulder Creek Library is the only one open. It's highly unlikely that a mother with children, with school and all her other activities, is going to be able to get the kids there. And I wonder what these kids are going to do. I think we have a responsibility to ourselves and to the kids and to our future to keep the libraries open. And I encourage you to find a way to do it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Zan Lahara, and I live in the Branch of 40 area. Clearly, the neighborhood branches are of tremendous value to communities, the communities they serve. But our library system is not funded directly by its users. Rather, it is funded by the goodwill of the community it serves, which in turn is based on the perceived value of the library system to the community. Measures B and R show that we have strong support for our community for a diverse library system that includes neighborhood branches. Our community perceives value in the smaller branches that goes beyond ill-defined usage statistics. These branches are a very successful way to cultivate lifelong library supporters. Young kids thrive within the safe environment of the neighborhood libraries. As their kids grow into adulthood, they will likely use the bigger branches in other libraries as well, but they will harbor memories of how the neighborhood branches improved their childhood. Whether they remain avid library users or not, those nostalgic memories will motivate them to be lifelong library supporters. When they settle down and have kids of their own, they will find that their young children will best be served by having physical books and a physical space. This is true for the foreseeable future. Two-year-olds should not be using e-readers. Parents will want a safe and pleasant environment with a large collection of books, access to the countywide collections, a reasonable number of open hours, the same things that we're asking for right now. That's not going to change. These patterns are stable for parents and families. We need to honor the desires of the community to move forward as a 10-branch system. If partnerships are necessary to make this a reality, we should form partnerships with the library system as a whole and not isolate branches off and trying to take those spaces that are already be using for libraries. We need to keep them as libraries. They're not big spaces. They don't have room to do half of the stuff that this other gentleman suggested. We need libraries first, and that's why we're all here, because we love the libraries.
My name is Alexandra Klikoff. I live in La Selva, and I spoke last week in support of keeping the branches open. I really appreciate our local branch, and I talked about how my daughter, who's now 19 and a sophomore at Penn, used the library. She was able to walk to it, and many of the kids who can't walk could bike to it because it's in a safe neighborhood. It's right by the school bus stop, near a store and a church and a playground.
what better nucleus of a neighborhood could you possibly have? She was able to go there on her own when she would be alone in the house or if she's being watched by someone who can't drive. And I really hope that my 8-year-old twins will be able to do that. She would go. She would get online. She would order books that she wanted. Some of them came from interlibrary loan from other counties. As she got older and learned how to do this, she could pick it up at the local library, read it. She could turn it in. She could learn responsibility and independence, something that we won't have if I have to take my twins to Aptos Library or drive them up to Central Library, and I promise, and I would love to take them to the library, but I'm a busy OBGYN, and I do not have time to get them in the car and take them there, and I would be really sad to have them lose that opportunity. I'm also hearing a lot about electronic media, and I'm kind of wondering what that is. And I have a value for physical books, especially for young people, the children. And I think about what my older son, he's 24, he said to me a couple of years ago, Amazon.com is going to replace the bookstore. And so I've used Amazon.com, and it's convenient. When I know exactly what I want, I can go there, I can get it. But I can't browse. I can't pick up a book and see if it's interesting or not. It will never replace a bookstore for me. And I think for a kid who doesn't really know what they want, if you put them in the library with the books and they can look at the books, they get the idea. But you put them with Amazon.com, it's not going to work because they have no way of really evaluating that. They have no basis for that. So I really hope that you will find a way to keep our local branches open, even with reduced hours. It would benefit the children, and the hours could be expanded when the economy returns to normal, which we hope will be in a few years. Thank you very much.
The last two on my list are Arlene Gansler and Joni Martin. If anyone else would like to speak, please work your way to the front and sign.
Hi. I've really enjoyed myself this evening. It's reminiscent of how I feel when I'm in the library in a lot of ways, because I see a lot of the same people. But what I wanted to say right now is that I wanted to share with you my experience of the new mechanical way of checking out books. I'm not a very astute person technologically, but I discovered one day by accident that you can just put the books in your bag. I mean, you can put the little red light on the first book, and then it says, you know, hold your time or whatever it says. And you can just put books in your bag and leave. And I thought to myself, could this really be happening? This doesn't seem like a good system. So I tried it in three other branches. And it works in all of them that way. You can just take the books and leave. And I thought, well, this is a way of not getting library fines. You know, it's really interesting. But I haven't abused the system because I'm very much in support of the library. But I thought that was really strange. And I wonder how much that cost us. And are we losing books?
Hi, I'm Joni Martin, and I'm from Felton, and I was a 19-year Ben Lomond resident, so I was impacted by my drive time to Felton to begin with for 19 years. I want to talk about a lot of things, so I'm going to talk fast. The first thing I want to point out is the circulation breakdown in three of the four branches that are being considered for closure. Garfield Park, 63% of their circulation is children and young adults' books. Felton, 58% children and young adult. La Selva Beach, 51% children and young adult. Now contrast that. Central, 26%. You are taking away the branches that serve our children most. Those are the top three branches in the library system in terms of percentage of circulation for children. I've done some initial research on the population of children in the areas that you're looking at closing libraries, and our best estimate, approximately 7,000 children for whom those are the closest libraries. Someone spoke here about the 70% of the library users that are not being reached. Let's do a study about how to reach them. Let's find out what's going to bring them in. But you've done town halls and surveys and asked people what's their primary priority in library use. Ease of access, community branches. For families, I've done anecdotal surveys of families over the last year. I've put all my personal work on hold and have spent hours talking to people in my community and in the three other communities affected. Over and over, parents say ease of access, our travel pattern. We don't take our kids to the library when we go to work. We take them between school, shopping, home, park. Very typical, particularly the little ones. The library and the park are the two major outings in a community. You're taking something critical to family life in a community away.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Based on guesswork. Do a study, please. No guesswork.
Jim Shar, Miranda Jubb, Lonnie Griffiths, Paul Marcus.
Hi, I'm Jim Snook. First, a metaphor. If you went to the grocery store and you found out that management had already filled four shopping carts and put them out front for you to choose from, and you looked and the only one that had Ben and Jerry's ice cream didn't have any coffee, you'd say, wait, this is unacceptable. And you'd say, excuse me, I'm going to go in and fill up my own cart. And if management chased after you and said, now, wait a minute, this one's really good for you. It's got lots of meats and vegetables. And you say, well, I'm a vegetarian, you know. You'd say, no, this is not acceptable, and you'd look for an alternative. Second point, don't get tricked by the bias towards the quantitative. I've seen all sorts of analysis trying to optimize visits per dollar and square foot, et cetera. Now, those are valid measures, but they're not the only thing. There's a lot of benefits to the branch system that are not quantifiable, and you need to consider those, too. If we were just interested in dollars and cents, we'd privatize the libraries and join the Tea Party. So, a third point is don't get bamboozled by buzzwords. I work as a software developer developing educational software on a team, so I believe in technology, but I've seen technology used a lot as a magic word, like we must have technology. And I think we the libraries benefit from technology, but that's not the only thing that they benefit from. And there's a lot of uses other than the technological uses. And when you're looking to the future, also look at what the library can do that's not being done in other ways. In other words, if I'm going to do my research, I might go to the university. The library is most, how is it most used and how is it most needed in the community? And the other thing is the branch system is not taking us back to the past. It's taking us to the future, because the future is probably less car trips and more of a sense of community. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Miranda Jubb, and I'd like also to comment on the digitalization of the libraries. And I think it probably is very likely that in the future, e-books and digital readers are going to increase in popularity. However, excuse me, I don't feel that... I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought. Sorry, could I?
That's okay. It's getting late. You come back. Come back after the next speaker.
Laurie Griffiths and Paul Marcus.
My name is Lonnie Griffiths, and I was here at the previous two meetings. And although I'm affiliated with the Genealogical Society, or I guess one of your special interest groups that you talked about. I'm here as a private citizen. Last May, at any rate, that group did send all of you a letter affirming our interest and willingness to support our continued use and cooperation partnership with the library. So, that being said, tonight I would just like to ask a couple of questions that I didn't quite find the answers to last week. Your task force report suggests, and the Sentinel suggests, you have four models that average about 8% across the board for library, I'll call it library content, the guts of the library. And then it goes on to say that the national average is 12%. My question is, what I don't understand or what I would like to know is, how much does the Friends of the Library contribute to that? And is it contributed, I assume it's contributed to the library content pie section. I'd be interested. Is it 1%? Are you actually advocating an expenditure of a 7% plan across the board? And are you also saying, that Santa Cruz is substandard, below the national average. I don't think so. We're not a poor city. We're an educated city. We're a tolerant and outgoing city. I don't understand why you would even suggest or presume to pick any plan that puts us substandard to the national average, because as all the speakers have said, once you set an amount or a proportion, it's not going to increase. It's just like trying to save at home.
Thank you, Ms. Griffiths.
Okay. Where'd you get that $500,000?
Thank you. Sorry about that. My point about digital readers was that all the funding in the world, however much we change the fundings for libraries, I do not believe that it will compete with companies like Amazon.com, like Apple. If the library wants to retain a unique position in the community, I don't think that going online will do that. There's a huge amount of competition there already, done by corporations, by profit-making organisations that, I mean, even if e-books are going to be lent out to people, which is not possible at the moment, I find it hard to believe that any of those organisations are going to allow the public library system that's there not to make money but to serve people to take over that niche. Thank you.
Paul Macklis, Task Force member. Thank you for hearing me again, and thank you for your service. During the last 6 years, there's been an ongoing battle over branch closures. It pits against each other directors, board members, staff, public, little and large branches, county and city branches. It's been tearing this system apart, damaging morale of staff, board members, the public, damaging public opinion of this system, and I would guess damaging our ability to solicit donors. Only this board can end the battle. As has been noted, a 5-4 vote or a 6-3 vote will not end the battle. By all means, look for a compromise, but a compromise that repurposes branches as non-libraries will not end the battle. A compromise that maintains 10 branches will. So it's my hope that this board will eventually except that this is a 10-branch system, and then look for the best qualities of all four models. And if you get to that point, two things for me are bottom line. Community branches should be staffed by staff, not volunteers. And number two, community branches should not be given starvation hours, but there should be set a bar of a healthy number of hours below which no branch would go. To do otherwise would not accomplish the goal of ending the battle and would not allow the healing to begin within this severely damaged system. Thank you very much.
Last on my list is Adele Gardner.
Hi, good evening. I'm a teacher at Santa Cruz Children's School, which is one block down the street from the Rance 40 branch. And I hope that in your packets you got like 25 letters from our students about how much they love libraries. And I want you to know that I agree with everything people have said about children and books, that you're not going to learn to read without a book in your hand and an adult sitting next to you who loves you and is encouraging you every step of the way. That said, I also believe that we are at a cusp of a time of change. And it is better for us to light a candle than to curse the darkness. It is better for us to come up with creative changes and be open to the fact that times change and keep the things that work, that are great for us, the parts of the library that are keep our communities alive, keep our families in their right patterns, keeping children with books, keeping seniors with access to the things that they need. But I really think that we need to be able to think outside the box about how we solve this problem and not be entrenched. And I'm hoping that you guys have the courage to do that. And I also support all the hard work and terribly difficult decisions that you have to make. So thank you for tonight.
Anyone else? Well, this will conclude the public input section, and I think it would probably be good to take a break here. It's 8:30, so let's give 10 minutes. Thank you. I really appreciate all the input. It does help the board in deliberating and making decisions, and particularly if we move ahead with the motion in helping people think of compromises. So with that, we do have a motion and a second, which if I can restate, unless you would like to, David.
Well, I'd like to have I don't know if we're going to move forward. I thought we'd have a little bit more discussion because, Mark, you had some comments beforehand that I think I'd like to speak to, and I'd also like to see if there's any comments after hearing from the public.
Okay, Jim.
I just wondered if maybe we could have there are a couple of things that were said that just raised a question for me. I don't know, however you want to proceed.
Okay, I mean, we can certainly take questions if there are questions that the board has around how to proceed today. Are you talking about?
Well, no, just a couple things that were raised, and most of these maybe they can't be answered now, but just for the future or sometime if we were to not take action tonight, if we could get answers on a couple of them. Is it all right if I do this now, or would you rather I wait?
Yeah, it's totally up to you. You can go ahead. I did take notes, and we can listen to the audio.
Okay.
On answering
if you'd like to do
questions
that's fine.
That were brought up, if that works for you. Okay. So we can start a discussion to clarify a conceptual motion that you brought, if that's what you would like to do. Okay, great.
I think, you know, first of all, I wasn't a part of the task force that looked over the past 6 months or 8 months at these different models. And I want to thank them for all of the hard work they put into it, because it's not easy. All the number of hours they put into it, the community meetings, and really work that they did to come up with these four models. But what we just heard from was the public as far as what their priorities are in regards to looking at these objectively as far as the impact each of them have. And so when we look at creating a group, as I'm proposing, it is to really take into account the comments we've heard regarding these models so we can prioritize where we're going to go moving forward in a way that really gets the not only the support of our community but also the support of the board, so we have a model that we can move forward with. That was the intent. The other is when you look at this, and I met with members for the past week. I've been meeting with people from Felton. I've toured the Felton branch, and I've also been talking with neighborhoods where my children use the Garfield branch, and I feel that these proposals do have direct impacts to our community that need to be taken into account, and so they need to be looked at a little bit more closely maybe than the higher level review that was done when the report was first issued. You know, we heard something that I think Rob Lee Levy said, and I wrote it down because I liked it. It said, different communities require different services. I think by having a representative subset of this board that looks at those, we can have a closer take on these models and come up with something that doesn't adhere strictly to one, but hopefully captures the long-term sustainability that we need and also addresses true community needs to provide services, literacy programs, and most of all serves our youth. And I really would like to see that happen, and that's why I made the recommendation up front, because I think that's a step that needs to happen as we move forward.
Thank you. Ellen.
I first want to thank people for coming tonight. I know many of you have had to do this a number of times, and it's difficult, but it was extremely, extremely helpful, I think. I was keeping track, and 46 people spoke, and although there were a couple that I couldn't quite categorize what they were speaking in favor of, what I heard basically was two people speaking in favor of Model D, a library employee and a person on the task force who wrote that model. And I think, and everybody else who I could classify was here from Model C. And I think that it's really, I'm very sad that we have created this situation where it's library employees versus the public. I just think that's unforgivable that that's where we are today.
My understanding of the motion is that the board would create a committee of the board that would explore a possible compromise. And I'm supportive of that. What I would want to add to it is that the committee would be staffed not just by city people, but by the county CAO's office as well. And in addition, I think the task force members, and I served on that task force, worked so hard. They put in hundreds, literally hundreds of hours to create these models. And then, and they worked with the numbers that were given to them by the library administration. They worked for 6 months on that. And then when they were completed, new numbers were dropped on them at a point where it was impossible to try and incorporate those numbers into the model. I think that the task force members have been treated very shabbily. And I think at a minimum, what we owe them is an opportunity, if anybody is interested in a model that they worked on, to go to take these new numbers, although another issue is whether these numbers are valid or not, which I have my doubts, but take the new numbers. Let's just say they're valid. Take the new numbers and come back to this committee and to the board, really, and say, you know, how would you change your model? Assuming these numbers are valid, how would you change the model? We would want them to do that quickly, like in a week or two, so that this committee would have the opportunity to see how these models would have changed with those numbers. So I guess I'm asking the maker of the motion, can we add the invitation to the task force members to revise their models and also include the CAO staffing in the committee?
And Santa Cruz City Manager,
yes.
I would think, would be appropriate also.
Yes.
If they can provide those in a timely manner, yes, I think that is appropriate, so they have another chance. So, yeah, I accept that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mark?
Thank you. I think that's probably appropriate, and I'm glad. I would like Pat Bush, for example, to take a look at these numbers and folks out of the CAO's office. Pat's been working on library issues and the numbers for many, many years, and the county essentially owns, if you will, half of the financial obligation, at least into this system. And the more that this has been headed, I mean, we're meeting in the city. We met in the city last time. This is starting to look like a city-driven library system. And I think that's the frustration you're hearing out of folks in Felton who are not only standing up for Felton but for all of the branches, because they understand the impact that a branch has in their community, in their sense of their community. It is too bad that Ben Lomond closed. I mean, I could point to any number of communities in the unincorporated areas that could and should have a library. We're not going there. We're not going to be able to go there. But to be trying to take out of the middle of a large populated area a core service that people identify as a core service, we get a response like this. And I think that response has been very appropriate. So I want to make sure that we're looking at the right numbers, looking at a much better sense of what the revenues are going to be, what potential any increases in PERS costs and insurance, and that we have an understanding of those. It is appropriate for the task force to take a look at that. I'm hoping that they're going to be willing to go do that. They're the ones that know the models the best, and then try and see if there is some room. I'm not sure what that room would be sitting here. But as I said earlier, if there's a compromise, if there's something we can do to, David, as you put well, to meet all of sort of these values and these needs and these what people need in their community, the services they do expect from the library, making sure we are providing service to children in a place and in a way that is valuable to them, then we owe to the community to really try and make that happen. We're on the precipice of a very critical decision here, and potentially an irrevocable decision, depending on where we go. And it would be sad to see us make a decision that 5, 10, 15 years from now, we say, oh, if only we hadn't undone that or hadn't done that. That's the magnitude, I think, of what we're facing. We need to step very carefully, and we need to do it with information that we have confidence in and information that we know is probably the best that we can have at this point in time. So at the risk of asking the task force members to go yet one more round with this and take into account those numbers, that's probably an appropriate step so that we make sure we have the best information to work with at the time.
Thank you, Mark. Lee?
I appreciate the motion that David made, and I agree that we do need to move down this road. I have a couple of things that I would like to see such a subcommittee focus on, and I also have a couple of concerns. First off, I don't think we need to start from scratch. Obviously, there has been a lot of work done, and so I would hope that the subcommittee would build on the information that's already there and clarify points and financial information. But I would like the subcommittee to look for common ground. I don't think just revising the models in and of themselves is going to get us further than where we are right now, which is divided opinion. I think we need to look for something that merges as much as possible some of the elements of all of them. And I also think that, we do need to sort of keep in mind why we convened the task force in the first place, which was financial sustainability, not just making the numbers meet, but making the system scalable and something that we don't have to go back and hopefully trim year after year after year. So those are some of the things that I'd like to see. I would also like to see a more defined description of the staffing levels and the services. I think that's something that wasn't laid out as clearly in the task force report. I think a lot of that information was there, but it didn't necessarily come out in the final report. And so I think whatever compromise model comes out, we need a pretty clear delineation of what that would be. One of my major concerns with this is the time constraint. I wouldn't like to see this drag on for very long, mostly because we do have a new budget year coming up, and whatever decision we make needs to be made fairly soon. I mean, taking into account everybody's opinions and trying to get consensus, but we do need to move ahead on a decision. And so I think, I don't want to see this drag out for another 6 months.
Thank you, Lee. Nancy?
Thanks, Barbara. And thank you to everybody that made it here tonight and last week. In August, when the task force, right before it started to meet, but we'd been planning sort of how it was all going to happen, and I said to a fellow board member, I said, this is all about branches again. And they said, no, it's about financial sustainability. So, okay. Fair enough, but it had that feel, once again, that here we were going down that path, and I've gone down this path many times now already. I wanted just to tell you a little bit about the people that were on Model C, because we had the largest group in on all the models. We had 7 people, and those people lived in all different parts of the county. So we had a UCSC librarian. We had a retired head of the Cabrillo librarian. We had a UCSC, I'm not sure what he quite does, but it's something involving technology at UCSC, and he's very, very clever with those things. We had a retired analyst from the Redevelopment Agency in San Francisco. We had an elected representative, and we had a citizen board member, and we did have one librarian or one staff person, and then we had another sort of later on. So we had a large group. It was a great group, and I have to say it was really a talented group. So I want to personally thank them, because I feel like they did a really great job. I wanted to read this because I think we... we as a board, as an institution, we have this amnesia, and it's common in all government. But I just wanted to read the May 2005 board resolution. We resolve that the Library Joint Powers Board create a policy not to close branches and commit that we are going to make the policy of not closing branches the cornerstone of how we handle our budget process and declare that keeping branches open is a core service. That was unanimous, a unanimous vote. So I really think it's a fair proposal to say let's find some common ground. And I've done that. I've kind of combed through these. I've done it many times. It's like, okay, actually, there's already a lot of common ground there. We just haven't really articulated it very well. But we're not that far apart, except around branches. So I wanted to go through the models and just briefly say what I think is one of the best parts of each one of them. Model A, which hasn't gotten much track, but I thought it showed us that it's really important to think of determining what percentage of the budget we allocate for personnel, because that is our biggest slice of the budget. It's our largest variable, and I think that that model was sort of it was an exercise in how to divide up money in a system. And I learned something from that model, and I really appreciated that. I thought Model B showed us that there's a passion and a vision in what happens in our library system. And it's not only what we do now, which it spelled out what we do now, but it's sort of where we want to travel to the future. It recognized the importance of the 10-branch system, and it placed an emphasis on quality service. But in order to make it work, it had to place the burden of recruiting volunteers on the smaller branch communities and replacing them with staff. So in the long run, this would not be sustainable, nor would it really be fair. But that being said, I would say that that model sort of captured what our library is doing today, and we should be proud of what it's doing today. Model D started from the place, and this is my opinion, I just want to say that, it's my perspective, that our system has evolved in an imperfect way. And as a result, it's not as efficient as it could be. And that is true. If we could wipe every branch off and, you know, facility off the face of Santa Cruz County and rebuild them in different places, probably would be much better. But we can't do that. So it was kind of a designed as a, what would it look like if we only had 6 branches and didn't have a history of promises to the voters? That's basically was the theory. So Model D designers began with the assumption that 10 branches were no longer financially viable. It followed the logic of a business model. Facilities with the lowest output were closed. And even though those facilities' operation costs were low, the money saved, it said, could be put to more productive use in other ways. The major component missing from this model was that it no longer served all communities, just some. But Model D did show us what many libraries now are looking at and strategizing about, how to engage the non-user. It asks good questions. How can we reach those interested in enrichment and not getting it? Do they know about us? And are they interested in what we can offer them? However, what it didn't say was that there are no library systems that close their branches in order to reach out to non-users in other ways. And I'm not really trying to slam anybody on this or any model. I'm just saying that I had a problem with that. So I'm going to speak a little bit to Model E right now because I don't quite understand it, but what I'm beginning to what it's beginning to show me is that we really don't want to take things away from people that enrich their lives. That's an important thing. I think the concept amounts to shifting some of the responsibility of the library system to other organizations so that the library can save money. What's not clear to me is what those farmer spaces would be called. I don't think they would be called libraries. So if you don't want to say the word closure, then it's important to know that you also won't be able to say the word library to describe the repurposed space. You'll have to call it something else. And tonight I heard somebody from a private, or maybe it's not a private school, I don't know if it's a charter school in the Seabright area, and they had this big plan. It looked pretty cool. So I think that if we were going to go down that road, we as a board would have to go out to those communities and we'd have to say, hey, how does this sound to you? Does it sound like it would work? So I don't know all the communities involved. I'm from the Valley, and I know my own community really well. And so I have to say right now, tonight, that the San Lorenzo Valley community is not interested in something that's not a library. And I can organize a meeting, I'm sure, and get people to come to the Felton Community Hall, and we can pay money to rent it, and I can ask all of you people and all of you friends to come down again to see if we could repurpose the Felton branch to something else. But I don't think we really need to do that. So I'm not saying, David, that we can't do it for other communities, because maybe we can, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to work for Felton. So finally, I just want to say about Model C. Model C shows us that there is a way to have a 10-branch system, and it's about moving forward together in good times and in bad. It shows us that it is important to citizens to protect the foundation of the library system, as stated in the Joint Powers Agreement. The phrase in that, that's, I think it's in the purposes section, number one, is providing extended library service within their communities. And there means the powers that all join together. And I can just imagine all those powers sitting around the table saying, okay, we're going to get together, we're going to pool our resources, and we're going to provide this extended library service. They didn't say what they didn't name the communities. The communities are not named in the Joint Powers Agreement, but they are implied. And I'm sure that every one of those powers sitting around the table that day in May 1996 were thinking about their community and their constituencies. So Model C shows us that it is essential to respect and protect the intent of Measures B and R, and that the sales tax money raised by those measures was intended for the 10 branches named in the public document. That's where Model C started from. And I would just want to say to the board, we can make another subcommittee, that's fine, and I'm willing to do whatever work it takes to move this process forward. But I needed to say that because this has been a fairly intense process for many people, and I think we need to not demonize the other models, and particularly Model C has gotten, just crushed, and it's still not clear to me quite why, but I think it is about branches versus not branches. So I think that's all I have to say.
Okay. Sam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I wanted to speak to the motion on the table, and
Because it seems to me that what we're trying to say is that we all want to keep the 10 branches open as libraries, and we want a committee to figure out a way to do that. And it seems to, if that's our will, why don't we just say that and give that as the mandate of the committee? Because I don't think a compromise coming back is really going to be about, well, we're only going to close one or two. That's not going to be an acceptable compromise, and that's not something that we would want a committee or people to spend their work and time to try to do and bring back to us. And I'm also, I mean, and the reason I also mention this, because I'm also concerned about the timing here. I think that we have a very serious public relations issue that we need to repair as quickly as possible. And I think, and I'm also want to make reference to the Friends of the Library and acknowledge that they're about to embark upon a $1 million campaign in the community on behalf of the library for technology. And it seems like that's what we should be talking about and getting behind and embracing that. And I think that what we should be doing right now is trying to put, I think, emphasis in that direction. I think it would address everybody's issues. I do appreciate the staff and the director for bringing the questions about the advances that we need to make. And I think that they do need to be made. And I think that that's part of what this committee could look like, could look at, is can we bring our library into the 21st century, but at the same time keep all 10 branches? To me, and I believe that we can do that. I mean, for my, and in my review and looking at the numbers, I mean, one, I just don't see even how in Model D they accomplish that goal. So I do have questions about that. But I think it can be accomplished. Now, it may take us a little longer than we want. It may not be the greatest gizmos in the near future. But I think that, you know, we can make advancements and improvements. And if we work with the friends and the community, we can be tremendously successful, but the point being that we can preserve and save our 10 branches at the same time as libraries. So I think we should acknowledge and have that be the mission of this committee. I would like to have it see a very specific timeline, because time is of the essence. We need to move forward quickly. And whatever, review of the numbers, I'm not so sure how much time, because numbers are constantly changing. They're going to be constantly being updated. So let's spend some time to do that, maybe to update them. But let's get on with what I view is the main task at hand.
Thank you, Sam. Catherine?
Let me start by thanking Nancy. You know, other than Nancy, I knew she was on C after visiting with her, but I really don't know who was on what A, B, C, D. And I didn't want to know, as if it would have made any difference. But anyway, thank you for acknowledging and for your comments. I ran into a friend this weekend, and she said, "The thought of closing a library is making me sick to my stomach." And I thought, I think a quarter of this county is sick to their stomach over this issue. It's just been so heart-wrenching, so difficult. It's become huge political, and, of course, I'm at the forefront of that fight. But and I apologize to all of you for having paused it, but people know, of course they know. I fought for Garfield, and I'd fight for any library. And I want to speak right to the motion, but just a couple points, because so much was about the future. And I was a children's librarian my first job in Brooklyn. And so this last 2 weeks, I visited two children's rooms. I sat there in the little chairs. There has nothing changed since 1956 in a children's room other than a computer. They're the little chairs, they're all the books, the parents on the floor. It was just, oh, okay, all right. you know, 50-some years later, a children's room is a children's room. A children's room in a library is like nothing else. So then, secondly, I was a bookmobile librarian for almost a year. So the other day, I went on the bookmobile. I went to the bookmobile, and I climbed on it. I didn't want anyone to know who I was, and I don't think they did. I swear, I think the only thing, and they're, you know, they're streamlined now. And when I was a bookmobile library in King County, Seattle, I bet the difference is this one now has air conditioning, because that one did not. But it, the future of the libraries is very much what the past libraries have been. There will be no difference other than technology. I watched the reference desk. A person goes up and asks a question. It sounded so familiar, because I was a reference librarian for 25 years. The tools are different. That's absolutely true. All the tools are different. The digital, the indexes now, and they're swift and they're wonderful, and you can't even imagine what it was like years ago with a card catalog without the Internet. Great respect for the librarians, because they can answer almost any question, and they need to be trained in doing that. The library schools no longer call themselves library schools. They're called information schools of information science. They've all kind of renamed them. But anyway, I just point that out because we're talking about future, and those things I mentioned are the bones of any library, no matter what year it is. And we can tweak them and we can do things, but there'll always be, hopefully, libraries with children's room, bookmobiles, reference service, advisory service. The Reader's Advisory Service, which was my favorite thing to do, because I like to give people ideas what they should be reading. And I know one of the arguments against Measure C was they were going to be replaced with book lists. And several people mentioned that, and I thought, yeah, well, I mean, that is unfortunate. There wouldn't be a professional librarian to help. But then I thought, a book list or close a branch? Book list or close a branch? So that argument didn't go very far with me. I mean, it just, you know, well, you already know that. So thank you to Nancy for your comments on repositioning space. I guess back to the motion, I'm so with Sam. We've had three large public hearings, 43 people, and I can't remember how many I count tonight. We have heard, I can't imagine, no matter what we do, we are going to hear differently. And if we're in a time crunch, if Model E comes up, some committee, we're going to have three more public hearings with hundreds of people at, if that meant that E does not include 10 branches. And I think we ought to face that. We really ought to face that. So in terms of timing, that will take 2 months, 3 months, whatever it will take. I would support the idea that we charge a committee. I think all those ABCD takes a lot of tweaking, and of course we're really looking at C and D with all the tweaking it needs to have. They've got to be flexible. I mean, I talk about the past, what libraries look like. Just keep in mind they're going to be the future as well, and they are quite different. Children's were mentioned time and time again. A few times the seniors were mentioned, but the baby boomers are becoming those seniors. And we don't want them getting in cars and driving everywhere. They are going to be using our libraries. Including me. I get to say those things. Yeah, I get by that. So would I support the motion? I'd really like to other people to discuss this whole idea of just starting out with one model. I don't want to call it C or anything, just a model that keeps the 10 branches open. We charge some smart people to look at everything and try to figure out how, with the new figures, how we're going to model those 10 branches. I think we heard a lot tonight, and that's why I wouldn't restrict a committee to certain things. But we heard a lot tonight about the lack of not looking at other things, looking at other costs. That's our job. We should be looking at all the costs, not just what was not charged or charged to the task force. We're looking at something else. I think that will be critical. So I think I hope my friend stomachache doesn't continue. I hope we're able to give her some solution. And I hope the rest of you who've just come out time and time again and care so passionately about this issue, you've been just great. And I always try to answer my emails, but anyone who sent an email to the library, I mean to the public library, they redacted the address off, so I couldn't respond to you to say thank you for your note. So anyway, thank you for your note, because I like to respond. Anyway.
Mark?
Just a couple notes. There's just so much that's speculative here because we haven't talked about the details, and that's what I'm hoping. I mean, if you're talking about the issue of are we going to close branches or not close branches, I'm ready to vote now. This board has voted in the past on that issue, and because we've got between C and D, we're talking about $300,000+. And we haven't really even fleshed out what all the implications are. There's a lot of assumptions about what those implications are. But, Sam, you're right. There's nothing that precludes us from going down a more modern technological path with the right assumptions, with the correct staffing ratios. There are avenues we have not really developed. It was less than a year ago I was talking to a colleague from San Luis Obispo County, and he had to get off the phone and end the conversation because he was going to open a library in Cayucas. Said, how are you opening a library in Cayucas? And that was one of the things that I was hoping that we would get to is other models around the state that are successful, that are maybe a little bit different, that allow those branches in the more remote areas where there's population that needs them. So if we're going to look at, I don't know that it's worth looking at A and B. We're sort of down to C and D or something. I don't want to put words in everybody's mouths. But if there's a way to look at the technological future that seems to be at stake and meeting the needs of the communities, which in my mind is keeping all 10 branches open, that's something worth doing to get everybody comfortable with that. And again, maybe not to put so fine on that because I don't know that we have agreements around here, but Catherine, I'm with you. I don't want to go through this sort of again and again and again when the underlying question of do we close branches or not close branches is the place that we keep tripping up. And the rest of it, I think we can figure out with the help of the professionals and with the staff. I mean, if we're going to invite in Martine Bernal and Susan Moriello and their appropriate staffs, they've been working these issues for quite some time. That's fine. I'm happy to give it a little bit of time. But at some point, we up here have to answer that question, and then that has to be the marching order, and we need to move forward. And yes, we have to do it in time to get a budget done, because we've got to do when we have to have a balanced budget by the end of this fiscal year, which is June 30th. So I don't know that we can get that done in 2 weeks. We've scheduled a meeting 2 weeks from tonight. I don't know that that's realistic, but let's set a finite timeline. Let's put some bounds around this. Let's get folks together and get information back to us and make that final decision, so that we can then get a budget and stop going around and around and around with the same question.
Jim?
Well, the good news to me is that we do have a couple weeks, it seems like virtually everybody agrees, before we get to the process where we are doing our budget for the coming year. So if we're going to, we talked earlier before this meeting started in terms of the public testimony. We saw in the Sentinel this weekend there are people who are looking for a compromise. They're trying to find something in the middle. I don't know that it would be that hurtful if we were to just take a couple weeks and look at the data and look at some of these new numbers. If people think that these new numbers have prevented good solutions from coming forth before, and just looking at the facts and see where that takes them. It's a couple weeks. I've been probably more outspoken than most about how we need to not kick the can down the road any further about the system's finances. At the same time, I've heard from Teresa that we can wait another couple weeks before there's going to be an impact on the budget cycle for this year. So I would just say let's study this question as Councilmember Terrazas has proposed and follow the facts, see what we come up with. It very well could be that this is a square that can't be circled or a circle that can't be squared, whatever the proper analogy would be. But I don't see what's wrong with trying to find that. I don't see what's wrong with all the time that we put into taking another couple weeks more, as long as those other couple weeks aren't going to impact the budget process. And I think we've heard that it hasn't. Just a couple quick points. On the point about the resolution that we do have from 2005 saying it was the goal of the board at that time to not have branch closures, that may well be the case. I'm not saying it isn't. We all know, though, we're in a significantly different world than we were just a couple years ago, much less back to 2005 when the economy was rolling. And, you know, you look at the cutbacks that have happened in California, you look at what's happened in Santa Cruz. Nobody thinks, no serious person thinks, that the city of Santa Cruz has made the cutbacks that they have with teen centers, with pools and everything. They do that because they like to take services away from people. You know, you look at the state, you look at the most vulnerable among us, you look at people who are severely mentally and physically handicapped. They have had funding devastated for things that are crucial to them to enjoy a halfway decent quality of life. Does anybody really think that folks in the state of California like taking those things away or like letting those people do without it? Of course not. We're in different circumstances. Lincoln said, as circumstances change anew, we need to think anew also. And I don't see what would be wrong with us just looking one more time at these numbers, at all these things, and seeing where they take us. A couple other bullet points. We heard from a couple folks that if you close a branch, it'll never be reopened. And somebody jump in if I'm wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, La Selva for a while was closed. There was no service. And then there was a time where it was run by volunteers. And now there's a time where it's a branch. And it's a branch right now. So it closed, and it saw a new lease on life as a volunteer-run facility, and now it's a branch. So I can understand the perspective of those who don't want to lose neighborhood branches. I'll concede it makes it less likely a branch is going to open. I think to say it's never going to open, I don't think that's supported by the facts. We've got an example right in front of us, to me, that says that that's not the case. I'd be really interested as well if, when this task force is going to be starting to work, if it's possible to quantify the item of how much cost or how many dollars are associated with some of these branches in particular. If I'm not mistaken, when that question was asked before, Director Landers and our finance director, Jack Dulles, there were not able to come up with an answer. And we've heard $300,000 now for these branches. I'd like to see what the data is that support that. Again, just a data point. Let's figure out what the number is. Is it 300,000? Is it 1.3 million? I have no idea. We don't know. And let's figure that out while we're doing this, this look that we all seem to acknowledge that we have room for over these next couple weeks. A couple things, you know, the dominant paradigm, I guess, that I bring to this, and I would be ecstatic if I didn't believe this. And I'll be ecstatic the day that I can be convinced that this isn't the case. But and I appreciate the folks who've come forward and saying you're making a permanent solution to what's a temporary problem. And I guess I just do not believe that in my heart of hearts. I do not believe that the fiscal situation that we're in is a temporary one. I will fully admit that the economy is not always going to be like it is today. At the same time, I don't think there's not a lot of people who are expecting a robust recovery next year. Who knows when that's going to come? But I think there's some systemic issues that even if when a recovery does come, that governments all over California, especially localities, are going to have to be struggling with. And these are issues that are by definition, going to get far worse before they get better. We talked earlier about there was allusion to some information that's come in relatively recently in this process. When the task force started, I think there was a reference to task force members being shabbily treated because numbers were dropped on them at the last minute, almost the implication that staff either didn't know or didn't care to provide people with accurate information. What happened, and Sam's point is well taken, some numbers, they are always going to be estimates, and people are always going to be able to debate what they are and agree to disagree and so forth. And then there are some numbers that are pretty definite. They get announced or released once a year, and they don't really change. And we saw one of those numbers that isn't going to really change when the PERS report came out. PERS is the retirement system that the city of Santa Cruz, the library system, city of Scotts Valley, the county, not Capitola, as I understand it, but most localities use for the retirements of their public employees. The cost that came out in December for what the impact is going to be on retirement, I think we saw in the staff report, not in the staff report, in the library service model report on page 66. And we heard about this all at our board meeting in December. So this report was not the first time that board members have heard about this. We heard a report from our finance director on what it was going to be. 1.9% increase in our PERS costs. That's 1.9% of our entire payroll. We've got a $5 million payroll. They're also projecting, our finance director, is a 2% increase in our health costs every year. When you add all this together, a broad number that our finance director came up with, that's an additional 3.5% that we have to take into account for the cost that this system is going to be facing. The models all assumed 1%. That's a difference of 2.5%. A 2.5 difference over on a $5 million payroll over a 5-year period is an additional $1.875 million that we're in the hole. That's not something that applies just to C. That applies to every single model that we're talking about. If most of the studies that I've seen about the PERS system, what's going to come in future years, PERS changed their rates a couple years ago, their discount rate from 8% to 7.75. There's talk now that they're going to change it from 7.75 to 7.5. It's only 0.25%. The impact of that 0.25% is enormous. That could be another 1.5 to 3 points of our payroll. Over a 5-year period, another 1.5 to 3 points of our payroll. Just take the average between 1.5 and 3 is 2.25. Another 2.25% that we haven't taken into account in our payroll numbers, that's going to be another $1.6 million that we're going to be dealing with in deficits over the next 5 years. So add in $1.6 million in deficits to the $1.875 from the most up-to-date realistic cost. You're talking about a $3.6, $3.7 million hole that we're in that none of these models look at. And that, to me, is especially serious when, I don't know, most of you weren't here for the Library Financing Authority meeting that we had earlier. It's a body that meets twice a year, and we allocate the money to the rest of the library system that the JPA can spend. And it's a representative one from each of the 5 jurisdictions in the county. When we looked at those studies, we saw that the best 2 years this system ever had were 2006-2007 fiscal year and 2007-2008. Those 2 years were virtually identical. Both of them were about $1.5 million better in terms of sales tax revenue on average than the average year since this system has been in existence since 96. Which means in 2007, we came off the 2 best years this system ever had, ever came close to having. And in 2007, 2008, we had a collections budget that experts have told us was pathetic. We had a staff training budget that is 1/10 of what our industry peers should be. We had virtually no reserves to speak of. We were borrowing from the city of Santa Cruz. There's been times over this last couple of years, we've, as I understand it, 3/4 of the year we've been in the red because Santa Cruz has to float us money so we can pay our bills on a daily basis. On top of those financial costs, if you go, those of you who've been to libraries over the hill, you know this. You see self-checkout machines. You see automated material handling machines that we just don't have here. The expert who looked at the Scotts Valley Library, who's looking at the Capitola Library that they're going to be building, her name's Kathy Page. She's universally acknowledged, I think it's fair to say, if not the leading library expert in public library design in the state of California, she's by any measure one of those people. When she came here to help with the Scotts Valley Library, she toured our system, and she was shocked at how derelict we are in technology. And if you want the best yardstick of how derelict we were, again, go back to 2007, 2008 when we came off those 2 fantastic years that we had as a system. We were using an IT backbone that virtually every other library system in the United States of America has been replacing for 10 to 15 years. This system used to be the gold standard. Now, if I'm not mistaken, right now today, we're the only system in the country that uses it still. Our system has been underinvesting in so many areas, and I think there's data that shows that we're overinvesting in branches. Does that mean I want to close branches? Does that mean it gives me a thrill to tell people in Garfield Park whose kids ride their bikes to the library that they are going to have to do with less hours if I had my view of the world? Of course not. But we have a responsibility to look at what the numbers are and to make some really hard-headed decisions. And the numbers tell me there's only one decision that we can make, and that is to err on the side of a more decisive financial option. D is definitely more decisive than C. At the same time, if we have an opportunity to find a compromise where some people can give a little, most people can give a little, and there can be the kind of unanimity that we'd like to have, that we can put this decision in our rearview mirror, not look back, focus, as we've heard from other people, on the good things that we can do to enhance technology and bring our libraries up to speed, I think that would be a wonderful thing. In conclusion, I also just want to close with one other thing. I'm fine with the motion to include county people in this new compromise committee that's going to go forward. At the same time, I have to say I'm a little disconcerted by it, because the implication is that the people that we have either aren't smart enough or can't be trusted to do this work. And I'm bothered by that implication. And some of you may not be, and that's your right. But that bothers me greatly. We heard that it's unforgivable tonight. That some of our, that it, this has become a, supposedly an employee, that our employees have spoken up for a model that they believe in. I think there's virtually nothing that's unforgivable in life. And I also think that somebody exercising the rights that they have as an American citizen to say whatever they want and have that idea be judged on their merits, that is what, that's what this country is about. That's what meetings like this are about. That's what polite, respectful disagreement in Santa Cruz is about. That's not unforgivable. That's something to be saluted to me. Another data point, we heard some people, and I've gotten several emails that, you know, why, that supposedly Teresa has gotten involved and Teresa has given an opinion and so forth. And I'll try to be brief. At the same time, there are several multi-jurisdictional agencies. I'm in the city of Scotts Valley. There's a, in this county, we've got the Regional Transportation Commission. We've got LAFCO. We've got AMBAG. I'm trying to think of some other jurisdictional bodies that are, that cover a variety of areas. Virtually all of those organizations are different than the library system. All those organizations have their own staff. They have a payroll. They hire a manager who oversees their staff. The library system is different. This is a hybrid model. All of the employees in the library system, they don't work for the nine of us. The manager of the system technically does not work for us. She is, every employee we have in the system is an employee of the city of Santa Cruz. And I checked with council members, plural, including a council member who's got a couple decades of experience. He says the precedent that they've followed in Santa Cruz for a long, long time, when controversial things come up, a department head is asked to give an opinion. We actually don't do it that way in Scotts Valley. It's pretty rare that a department head will weigh in when there are a variety of options that are being considered. I've been told by people who have been on this city council since, the Santa Cruz City Council since 1978, they do it differently in Santa Cruz. Their city manager expects their department heads to speak up when something comes in. Teresa reports to the city manager of the city of Santa Cruz. We heard when this council took this matter up last Tuesday, the city manager of Santa Cruz, Martin Bernal, asked that this be brought before the city. So that was his decision, he said. He asked for her opinion. That's how they do it in Santa Cruz. So if you don't like her opinion, that's one thing. To say that she's somehow crossed a boundary, I don't think that survives an analysis of the facts, because they do it a little bit differently in Santa Cruz, at least in my experience, than they do in Scotts Valley and elsewhere. They wanted her opinion. She was doing what her superiors asked her to do. And, you know, finally, again, I just want to come back to this point. I hope whatever decision we can arrive at, we can stop somehow implying that our employees are doing something wrong if they have an opinion on how to best serve the people of this county. These are folks whose professions, whose degrees, whose entire lives outside of their families are dedicated to serving people in libraries. And the idea that they shouldn't be heard from, I just don't understand. We had a board member at a meeting 1 week ago tonight who said she couldn't understand why some of our employees hate the idea, hate smaller branches. Use the word hate. Now, when my kids go into a library, I've got four kids, 11, 8, 6, and 3. When my kids go into the library, my boys walk into the library, my daughter runs into the library. She runs into the library because there's a librarian here who, when she comes in, when she's got time, she shows her the books that she wants. She takes her around. She spends time with her. She makes it a wonderful experience. That woman shows nothing but love. I've never seen anybody in the system show a hint of hate. And the implication that that is true, I think, is just, it's not unforgivable because nothing's unforgivable, but that's just wrong, and that type of scapegoating has got to stop.
Barbara, can I call the question in the vote?
I would like to first call myself to give an opinion, and then, absolutely. Where do I start? First of all, I fully support what Councilmember Reed said in his support of staff and our director. They have their opinions. They should be allowed. In fact, our director should be required to provide her opinion. That's why we hire her, for her professional expertise. And our staff just as Jim said, our staff members as individuals should be providing their opinions as well. We listen to the public, we listen to the board members, we listen to staff, we listen to our director. The one thing I do know about our staff and our director, they have their opinions, they've expressed their opinions, but whatever decision the board ends up with, they will carry that through to the best of their ability. I feel very confident about that. So I think we need to keep that in mind as we're talking about these issues. Back to the motion. I do support a compromise. I do support a subcommittee to go off and do that in a as timely a fashion as we possibly can. I do agree that getting staff from the various entities involved also works well. I do think we need to look at some of the late-breaking expense information and see how that impacts whatever compromise we might come up with. I think the whole question of financial sustainability is one that may have been misunderstood. Financial sustainability relies on more than just meeting the direction that the board has already set on things like reserves, and of course, whether the board sets it or not, we have to live within our revenue guidelines. But to Jim's point, back in 2007-08, we were looking at 5-year cost projections, and we saw that by 10-11, we were going to start going into deficits, and this was well before we thought about the recession. One of my biggest concerns is that whatever decision we end up with 3 years down the road, we're going to be all, well, I won't be because I won't be on the board, but the board will be sitting here facing the same issues one more time. Now, I know we can't have perfect foresight, and we're not going to be able to do something that's going to last 15 years even, but I think we need to look beyond 5 years and provide a model that gives our public a consistent level and quality of services and programming and hours. I'm not ready to say that has to be 10 branches, although I do think that could be 10 facilities under the wing of the library in some form. So with that, I also think we should not go off to work a compromise between C and D. I think that is, we need to be more open than that. We do have other models that the task force worked on, and while they haven't been talked about a lot, I think they do have lots of information and good things to tell us. We seemed to go into our corner so quickly over C and D that we haven't really explored some of those other models. So I would not want us to go into a compromise saying what we're going to do is try to find a compromise between C and D. I think that's restricting it too much. So with that,
Chair Gorson.
Yes.
If you're completed, I felt like some of Jim Reed's comments were directed at me, and I would appreciate an opportunity to
absolutely
respond if you're done.
I'm done, and you may respond.
Thank you. My comments about the Director of Libraries' role in this, I think, have been misunderstood. I understand that on many boards, staff is asked for a recommendation, and in many situations, that's entirely appropriate. What was clear here, though, is when we created the task force is, first of all, we could have asked the Director of Libraries, rather than creating the task force, we could have said, here's the money, what do you think we should do with it? And our choice was not to do that. When we get to the end and the director makes a recommendation, okay, you know, if she's asked specifically by the City of Santa Cruz for a recommendation, she gives a recommendation. The problem that I have is that it
it went far beyond a recommendation and became every piece of paper created became an advocacy piece. And the merits of the other models were misrepresented, in my opinion. And I know them pretty well. They were misrepresented, and the benefits, the possible benefits of D were, in my opinion, also misrepresented. And I think that's when staff does that, they really undercut themselves. They, when there's an effort to control what the board decides by cherry-picking the information they get, in the long run, in the short run, you may be successful. In the long run, it's incredibly damaging, incredibly damaging. And I've rarely seen this, but I have seen it before, and I'm very sorry to see it. I'm very sorry to say it. But I'm not here to protect staff. I'm here to represent the public. And if I see what I think is wrong, if I see behavior that I think is wrong, I'm not going to pretend it's okay. I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to protect it. It's got to be out there, and, you know, it is what it is. And presumably we'll deal with this at a future date. But I felt like I had to respond to that. Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
I just had a quick question on your comments. You mentioned there were several models that we didn't see.
No, we saw them all in the report.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, I didn't mean to.
All right.
So, David, back to you.
Yeah, I'd like to call the question for the vote.
Can we restate?
that we postpone a decision on selecting a model tonight to, and I think out of deference to the board members, whether we could, and also for the creation of a budget, if we could come back in a month, is that possible? So can we take 4 weeks to look at this?
You know, I'm going to be out of town in 4 weeks. Can we do 5 weeks?
No.
We have, I think our first meeting in March is March 7th, which would be 3 weeks. I know that's soon, but maybe it's possible.
To attempt to come back in 3 weeks?
I don't think it's going to be.
To attempt to come back
sure.
in 3 weeks?
We can attempt.
Based on updated financial information and a review of all models to come up with a modified version based on what we've heard tonight and also from throughout this process.
Jim.
David, did you have a particular committee composition in mind, or what are your thoughts on how we handle that, or the boards? Or
I'd like to maybe, Ellen, I mean, as a second of the motion, we could talk about who that might be, but I would think it would be a member of the county, member of the a member on the board, member from the city of Santa Cruz, and a member of one of the other cities. That would be four, you know, composition of four members.
As a second, I would offer that the committee include David Tarasas, myself, Barbara Gorson, and Sam Story.
That's acceptable. Yeah.
I think that's a perfect committee.
Okay, Nancy, and then Catherine.
Okay. I always have trouble with these sort of recommendations because they kind of go on, and there's lots of things that people say about them. But so if somebody could state it clearly, because what I heard previously was that some people think we should start with that we have a 10-branch system. And then I heard some people say that, no, we're going to look at all the models again. And I heard some people say that would be too cumbersome. And anyway, I've heard a lot of things. So I think we should be really clear. What I heard was that we were going to start with the 10-branch system and make that work and pull from all the other models best practices and those and sort of pull it together, and we'll have our model. That's what I heard. Maybe I misheard.
That's not what David said. And no,
but I think I heard Sam say something to that effect.
Well, I mean, and David is making the motion. Yeah.
I think it's part of our sub, you know, the subgroup deliberations. I think that's exactly what we're going to look at. What is possible? And so, I mean, that's included in the direction that we'd be going moving forward.
So, are you including that there be that it start from a 10-branch model or not?
Well, I think we want to look at every. I want us to look at all of the task force work. And that includes a 10-branch model. That is included in that. So as a group, we're going to get updated financial information based on what was presented. But I think that is, I believe that that's going to be part of our process to look at a 10-branch model and what is feasible within the system. I mean, I really want to make sure that we protect valuable community services. I mean, we've spent 2 days, and people have driven from throughout the county to come here to Santa Cruz, Loudoun Nelson Center last week. And I would hope that the next meeting, maybe we could do it in a neutral place, as was suggested, so that it doesn't – it's not Santa Cruz every time you're having to come out to, but perhaps the county board office will visit next. But I really want to see that we
–
Yeah, I want to come up with the right decision. I don't want to rush something. We need to look at this as being something that can be viable for the long term, that provides the maximum benefit to our community, because I think that's what the purpose is, that we're protecting library and we're not diminishing it in any way based on our available resources.
Catherine, and then we'll go to Sam, and then Lee.
Well, I'm not sure I'll support the motion. I so latch on what Sam said. You realize if we come back without just a 10-branch system, this committee, mm-hmm. we are back
right.
with this. Yeah. So when Sam spoke, why don't we just start with a 10-branch system and come up with the best we could possibly do, which will be sustainable. I think... You've had 20 people on the task force who've done their homework, and very good and very honorable. So I don't know what a committee could do in 2 or 3 weeks. I do want the new numbers. I think it's going to be critical, absolutely. And we're going to have to look at a model of 10 branches with brand new numbers and just figure out how we are. And in that sense, we're starting over, because I want to look at the whole budget. You have to look at everything. So I just doesn't do it for me to set up another committee without some charge that is more meaningful instead of redoing it. So I haven't voted yet, but I'm certainly thinking of forget it.
Sam?
Well, that was the point I had made earlier, but, I mean, I wasn't trying to drive that home as a part of this motion, but if I am approved to be on this committee, I just wanted everybody to know that's the perspective that I'm going to come from. That's what I want to work for. That's what I'm going to be looking through all these budget numbers and drilling down to see if we can accomplish that. That's what I want to accomplish. And so, and maybe if you get, I mean, Catherine, if you could just depend upon that, that perspective is going to be in that committee, that maybe that will help drive to that outcome. So I just wanted to speak to that, and in terms of, I did want to speak because there was comments about having other people look at the numbers, and that some reason that was a reflection upon those. You know, I run a large organization. I've come to learn it's always best to have as many people as possible, you know, looking at your work, because, you know, we all have good intentions, but in the rush of time, in the, you know, the rush of the day, sometimes things can be missed. And it doesn't mean anybody did anything wrong or that they aren't smart enough to do it. But you know what they say about, you know, two heads are better than one. So let's have other people look at it. There's nothing wrong with that. And so I just wanted to say that.
Lee.
I'm not in favor of adding a requirement that the subcommittee look at a 10-branch system, mainly because I think that sort of might rule out Model B, which I think the subcommittee really should look at. And to me, you know, Model B is not necessarily a pure 10-branch system the way it is now, but I think it's a model that really needs to be explored further, where, you know, it raises the possibility that the branches aren't staffed the way that they are now, and I don't think we can rule that out. So I wouldn't be in favor of restricting something to 10 branches, you know, staffed solely by library members.
Let me restate. We are looking at all options. So, I mean, I think Sam captured the sentiment that we're looking at a way to try and protect these branches, and we have to look at updated financial figures to make that decision. I think that the task force that we've just identified is going to do all that we can to find that opportunity.
All right. So I think we can restate that motion. I think I can do it.
I've got it.
The motion is, and tell me if I'm wrong, David, that we will postpone the decision on new service model. We will convene a committee with David Tarazas, Ellen Peary, Sam Story, Barbara Gorson. We will look at all options. We will look at updated numbers and validate numbers. The committee would also have staff supporting it from the various jurisdictions. And time is of the essence, and we will look at 3 weeks and see where we're at. And we do have a board meeting in 3 weeks, so we certainly could update the full board at that point as to where we're at.
There was additional I had asked to add to the motion, and I think the agreement was that we would invite task force members who had worked on a particular model, and if they wanted to update their model with new numbers, that this task force or committee would receive that information.
Yeah, I accepted that. But it wouldn't be a part of the discussion. They would bring that information to us for the review.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Any further inputs? All right. I think we should take a roll call vote here. Can we do that?
Sure.
Supervisor Peary?
Aye.
Citizen Gert?
Aye.
Councilmember Byers?
Aye.
Councilmember Reed?
Aye.
Councilmember Tarazas?
Yes.
Supervisor Stone?
Yes.
Councilmember Story?
Aye.
Citizen Portinger?
Yes.
Citizen Gorson?
Yes. Motion passed unanimously.
That's a good sign.
That's a good sign.
That's a good omen.
That's, and we're not quite at adjournment yet, but we're really close. We have written communications which do not need any action taken. If there's any urgent issue that anybody has with any of those, bring that up now. Otherwise, I do believe we are adjourned.